Mr. Lestoker. It's strange to hear your voice when you're not mocking a book for preteens. That's right. I recognize your voice. Do you recognize mine, Mr. Lestoker? Maybe if I talked like this.
Hey, Denise, I'm going to put on a disguise and head to Hooters and see if they remember they banned me for life last week. Where the hell's my Cuervo tank top? Oh, my parrot had tattoos. Parrot and head spelled wrong.
Yes, that's right. It's me, Larry. You make a lot of assumptions up in that ivory tower of yours, yucking it up with that braying jackass of a host of yours. Well, I have lived my life as a gentleman, and as a gentleman, I have always taken the high road. Until today. For you see, Mr. Lestoker, that coffee you're currently sipping is laced with a deadly poison. The antidote is hidden within reach, but in order to find it, you'll have to decipher a series of clues so expertly conducted.
Oh, man, I'm sorry. You totally bought it, didn't you? I was going for a little Die Hard 3 thing there. It's a great movie, Samuel L. Hell yeah! Oh, man, you seem pretty cool, Stoker. You should come down to Pensacola next week. There's an all-chick Zeppelin cover band that's playing in the casino parking lot next week, which is good, because they won't accept my credit card inside anymore. Let's get a whale. Anyway, thanks to the royalties, bought myself a new Cuervo tank top. You guys are all right. Hey, Larry out.
Good to hear from him. Had me a little worried, but yeah. things turned out all right.
You were spit taking whatever you were sipping on at the moment, and thinking that maybe there was a chance that was real.
Yes,
as you listen to that in real time. I'm not sure how the fiction of
that's
that
how it works. Yes, we listen to our own podcast in real time, and then we react to it. Yeah,
and forget so. That you had put that onto the thing, and then
right. So anyway, this is, of course, 372 pages. We'll never get back. I am Michael J. Nelson, the other voice.
Connor Lestoker, and greetings to anyone who might be listening for the very first time and stumbling into something where you have absolutely no idea what's going on. Glad to have you on board.
Yes, we like to keep our cuts so deep that they're inaccessible to all but just a handful of people. But this is a bad book podcast. We read books we don't expect to like. We are in the middle, we're at the end of a doozy of one called Antigua, Land of, I always get it wrong, Fairies, Wizards, Heroes?
Yeah.
Okay, nice. I don't even have the hardcover next to me here. This is the final one, and I'm just going to say out of the gate, this could be the most insane reading we have ever done here on 372 pages. Connor, your thoughts?
I wouldn't dispute that. You know, as we've finished this reading, it's important to sort of place it in the canon on the tiers of all the books we've done. And I think that you're correct. As we've discussed earlier, the book defies all known laws and rules of how you write a book and tell a story. And the final probably 18,000 words of this, I think it was four chapters in the book, live up to that very well. There's no you do get an ending, but the way that they get to it is like Billy in the Family Circus on the Sunday cartoons, where he wanders about his neighborhood and takes a little roundabout path just to get from school back home or something like that. And that is how the Ellises chose to finish this story here.
I was put in mind, speaking of Billy, of the Jim Downey quote from Billy Madison. Not a fan of the movie, but a fan of Jim Downey and that quote of him just saying, you know, what you've just done here is the most rambling incoherent. Nowhere at any time you come close to having a rational thought. Everyone in this room is dumber for having heard what you just said. That's what I think about this book.
And Larry says, you know, just sort of like, yep, yeah, all right, that's, yeah.
Fair.
You
that's
summed
fair.
It up, yes, yeah. Because it's not to get ahead of it, but I grouched last time that someone had spoiled the ending of the book for me. You know
sure.
what I mean? I had seen sort of the last sentence of the book, and that's sort of burying the the forest for the trees there, because the it was not about the destination, it was about the journey here in these final four chapters. And you could never have predicted in a million years, even though some of the other things had been ruined in fanfic, you know, the fact that there was a character with wings, that was in fanfic. I forgot about that, and the way it was introduced was still just so fantastic and so unexpected that I can't fault anyone for sending those things in, because the pieces, the way they come together, that's the journey here. That's what the Ellis magic is all about.
Yeah, let's get into it, because, yeah, the way they go about this is, I don't think we're going to be able to come up with comparisons, but we'll see.
Sure, yeah, maybe something will occur to us.
Yeah. All right, so we're in chapter, what is it? 15?
It started with 15, yeah. 15. I went through and I broke out the, I put the chapters into the ebook, because as we've discussed before, the ebook, the paperback, the hardcover, all completely different.
Yes.
And even though the ebook is the canon copy, because it's the longest one, it does not include the chapter breaks.
Yes. So Connor has been chiding me about occasionally looking at the hardcover. I don't know why that bothers him so much.
Well, I just am worried, you know. It's like when we write a movie and someone uses like the like an old edit of it, and you so yes, they're like, oh, yeah, I did minutes 20 through 40. And it's like, no, that's not the...
yeah, so, no, I read the ebook. I just like to check in on what's happening in the hardcover and what were those choices. And it is obviously completely arbitrary, and it is madness like everything else involved with this book. So up to this point, here's the plot, is Rebecca escapes from...
Wales.
Wales. Britain.
Yep.
The UK, I believe, is never mentioned.
Nor is London.
That we invented London.
Sure, but you know, it turns out
she was like doing a Dickensian, you know, like obviously a London
boarding house.
Yes,
orphanage?
Like a
board,
yeah, an orphanage. That's right. Yes, so we were fooled into, you know, it was the magic eye thing. We saw that maybe where it wasn't there, but
yes.
Anyway, she comes swims with some mermaids, including Chondria. My favorite name in the book.
Wow, that's well.
I think she comes up again. Across the waters of Antigua, into the land of Antigua, where there are four, possibly five kingdoms. We're not sure whether the northernmost kingdom is, you know, annexed by the slightly more southern part of the northern kingdom.
Sure, the family feud that's going on there.
Yes.
The revealed in this section, family feud.
Yeah, which is, we laughed at that, you know, that reference to it, but that the long con happened.
Yeah.
Larry wins again.
But yeah, there's a four cardinal directions. The north is at war. I mean, the north is evil. They're the evil sorceress Gwendevere, her recently deceased blue dragon Voraltrar, is entering into the final battle, the final, you know, Lord of the Rings, you know, zoom out wide. Just the battlefield is full of goblins, black panthers, centaurs, archers, mini-wads. And they're all, like, you know, rushing at each other like at the end of a Marvel movie. And that's sort of where this chapter starts. And, yeah?
On the battlefield, did the centaurs join the battle?
Yeah, that's how chapter 15 starts, is the centaurs are...
Oh, the centaur boys, but not the unicorns. Sorry, I get them mixed up
because
the unicorns are headed by a female head of the centaur or head of the unicorn.
Yes, okay. That's just some Ellis magic right there. That I think they're about to join the party. They're in their own land, but they do rejoin at the end of all this. I think they've sort of taken the neutrality pact type of thing.
Yes, they control the prophecies. That's
yes,
what we've learned.
Right.
Yes. Okay.
And I want to read this now, because this chapter starts with one of our favorite things about this book, which is the sort of list of characters, name people, and whether they're new, whether they've just been mentioned once in the previous 120,000 words up to us. But Craig has been keeping track of all of these.
And good.
He wrote in here to say that by his count, there are at least 248 named or notable characters in Antigua. If I included characters whose names were likely misspelled because the Ellis has lost track of them later in the book, such as the centaur boy Euclepsis, who is also Eclepsis, and the elves Alroy, Finbar/Finbar with two A's, and Nevins/Nivens, That number could be as high as 252 if we count them as unique. He says, Antigua has so many characters, I also made a chart to visually compare it with 14 other books known for having lots of named characters. And he's put this into an infographic, like something out of a textbook. It's incredible. And he's broken it down, the density of named characters in notable works of literature. So it's characters per 100 pages of book.
Right. I'm sure we're going to get some Russian novels here.
We sure do. Okay. Here's how it builds. He starts with Les Mis, which has per 100 pages has 5.3 characters. Mm-hmm. It slowly builds with then Shogun, Atlas Shrugged, Bleak House. I don't know two of those. Crime and Punishment has 9.6 characters per 100 pages. Then it goes up to In Search of Lost Time, To Kill a Mockingbird, surprisingly. Infinite Jest has 15.9. Game of Thrones, 25.2. The Eye of the World, The Stand, Harry Potter and the Philosopher's Stone, number one in the series, is 37.2. Then we get The Quilters Push Back at 38.2. So that was 63 named characters in 165 pages. Then War and Peace coming in with 600 characters, with a total of 41.7 per 100 pages, 41.7. And then we get Antigua at a nearly double that, 80.8 characters per 100 pages, because it had 249 characters and 308 pages. So it's like one of those things where the spike just makes everything else look like a flat line on the page before it comes to it.
Oh, the hockey stick graph.
Yeah, it's amazing. It's amazing.
That is fantastic. I mean, it's good to know that we're not insane, too. I'm like looking at this. Do we know who this person is? And it's like, yep, do the search. And it was literally 210 pages earlier.
Yeah.
One mention of the name, you know.
Yeah. And so you get some of the other books in there, like Game of Thrones. I know, you know, there is a guy who is the keeper of the show Bible. So, like, you know, that's when George R.R. would have to be like, well, who the hell is this guy? Where does he come from? He would, you know, that would be the guy who would know it. And I know Star Wars has that and all these things. So the Ellises need to employ, recently failed out of college, you know, nephew or something to do that task for them.
I mean, it's probably very, very intense the first few months getting it all together.
Right.
And then, you know, as you wait around for them to start a book, you're really just, you're on hold for a while.
Come
with me for a while. We're going to Applebee's doing an onion loaf over there. Like, shouldn't we be working?
You're still paying me though, right?
It's paying you. Jadis is paying you.
It's a party. I mean,
Cat Eyes Entertainment is still... Yeah, let's go party. You don't party?
Cat Eyes Entertainment. But yeah, so speaking of that, we just get, you know, we're back to the centaur boy Euclepsis, who I thought was going to die because he was doing like the, they were doing like the, he's like, I want to fight too. And they're like, get back. But I thought that was going to be building on something because that's sort of a trope in, I don't know, literature or movies. But he goes back and smiles at Rebecca and is never mentioned again.
But they share a warm moment as their arrows are piercing the spleens of their enemies. But I was thinking maybe because they're smiling at each other, like, isn't this nice, as they're firing arrows? And like, are they paying attention? Is this maybe friendly fire, like right into the backs of the other centaurs?
Right. Yeah, they're making doe eyes at each other just like as they unleash arrows there.
Guys, higher, arc them up more.
we get a couple of great named head archers. Every king has a specifically named number of archers. So Arthur has 200 archers. Arlex Hondrio has 300, and Thomasin has 100. So they've obviously managed their priorities different here. But we got the archer Selig, like Bud Selig, the former
Bud Selig,
baseball
yep.
commissioner.
Sanford and Sons. We have Sanford.
Yes, we have the head archer Herman, who I think is probably the archer equivalent of the knight Sir Larry. And those are not the best names we're going to get in this section, because we get introduced to some brand new characters, and some of my favorite names in the whole book are going to come up in the next chapter.
But one of the archers, Can you remember the name of Napoleon Dynamite's llama? Well, his grandma's llama?
I can't. I think I see it in front of me now. Was it Tina?
Tina. Come and get your food, Tina. Yes, this is Tina.
No, I mean, you gotta put a Tinra or Trina. That's, you know, that's Ella's talk here. Come on.
Yeah, I mean, just Daniel? Come on. Dranroll. It's not that hard.
And you sort of get this battle that's, you know, for the most part, it's fairly standard, but you get a few interesting things that sort of obviously come out of nowhere, such as the elf Nivens and the elf Ragnahall, would demonstrate the well-known elf ability of shooting fireballs from their hands.
Yeah.
It says,
yeah.
Fire came right from the hands of Nivens and Ragnahall. The elf Nivens and the elf Ragnahall had the ability to throw fireballs from their hands. They both tossed fireball after fireball right at the goblins and trolls. So it's very easy to just imagine it being the standard, like Mario, toss a fireball, it bounces at them type of thing.
Yes. I did pull up the classic LARPer lightning bolt.
Yes.
It lives up to it.
Man.
We won't roll it in here, but pull it up. It's still on, obviously, it's up there on YouTube.
Yeah.
Check it out.
My favorite moment of that is as the guy's throwing lightning bolts, another guy just says, "Death!" It's like, well, lead with that.
Yeah. And then we get, maybe this is one of your favorite names. I don't know. The elves, Caven and Cathal.
Yes.
Cathal? Kettle? Who knows? Along with the gnomes, Beegan, Jarloth, there's Marnaduke.
Marnaduke.
Fanfic, and Carrick.
Yes.
Beegan? Bagan? How are you? The gnome names. How are you handling these?
Maybe come up in their Wales research as they were sort of doing their extensive, you know, tax write-off tour there so they could get Rebecca's details right? That sounds
sure.
That sounds sort of possibly Welsh or Irish.
Biggin. Yeah, I don't know.
Those are the gnomes that are standing by as Sir Williamsburg and Sir Bronson roll the gigantic man-made slingshot into the field, which was also covered in fanfic.
Yes.
And that is they are able to shoot rocks with them. And the as they're doing all this, we get more characters that come on, and it's sort of just every character is doing their own thing. We never really see any of the bad guys die. You just pan to the next character who's attacking them, which is the next one is the fairies who come onto it, and they all evidently possess different spirits. And the fairy Prisandra yells, "I call upon the spirit of wind to come and destroy our enemies, blow forth powerful winds, and stop our enemies in this track." And it says, for such a little creature, her winds were fierce. Her winds were so fierce, they even blew her backwards a little. And so what's your reaction when you summon a powerful spirit wind, and when you summon it, it's so powerful that it blows you back a little?
I'm always surprised by that I had the power, first off.
Sure, yeah, right.
I took this, I'll admit, as a fart joke that snuck in there.
Yes.
For such a little creature, her winds were fierce.
Yeah, that's sort of a Shakespearean, you could have a bawdy character say that.
Sure. But no, I don't, yeah, I, oh. the powers just
I,
don't
I suppose
come out of
happened.
Nowhere.
Yeah, so. Yeah. Well, her reaction is, she said, ooh. So, there you go. I guess it's, oh, or ooh, yeah, it's O-O-H, exclamation mark. That's
we know how these things go, right, in the Magic Three. It's in comedy. It's probably in all forms of, you know, literature. Three is a magic number.
Uh-huh.
And you build. And so the next one, what is the second one? Is that fire?
Yeah, they step right on Finbalor and Alroy's toes by summoning a fireball magic.
Yes. And how do you build from there? I'll tell you how you build from there. The wall of dirt stopped a large part of her army and knocked them down. A wall of dirt.
Yeah, which at some point in time, the dirt from the ground rose up into a giant wall of sand. So she does possess the ability to transmutate dirt into sand. So that's important as well. I want to call attention to Rebecca's reaction because nobody knows the fairies can do this. Like, you know, the blue dragon Voriltrar is incinerating entire villages as the fairies, like, you know, weren't they, like, dicking around with pixies? They were, like, you know, teasing each other or something?
Yeah, they're mostly they're fighting and fighting and throwing stones and then giggling, I think. I don't know.
Talking about how old they are, etc. But it says no one had any idea the fairies had such abilities. So they're just sort of, you know, they're letting these things play out. But when Rebecca saw the ball of fire coming from the fairy Brianna's magical wand, she yelled, "Whoa!" And that's not like a Joey Lawrence "whoa." That's a W-O-E. Like a "whoa is me" kind of "whoa." So that's another patented Ellis text-to-speech mistranslation.
Unless, again, trying to be Shakespearean, you know, like this is inner monologue.
Right.
Whoa.
True.
Although that doesn't seem like the time for "whoa," but, you know.
No, yeah, things are going well for the heroes.
Yes.
Yeah, because it says the evil sorceress Gwendevere was losing the battle and she knew it. She had less than half her army left and no dragon. So I was just wondering, we talked about it last time, but the hologram, it must rely on the dragon being alive in order to, you know, to function.
Yes, I guess the dragon does have to go into the mocap suit.
Yes, right.
And run it from there, you know. like Iron Man, there has to be a man inside the suit.
Yes. So it's unfortunate. So the hologram dragon is lying just as dead as Voraltrar is.
Yeah, so it seems to be going bad for the sorceress Gwendevere. And then so the three great wizards, we're already pretty much done with the battle because the three great wizards just approach her now.
Mm-hmm.
Usually these are the things that happen towards the end, right? I mean...
Right. Yeah. Oh, approach is not how they put it in the book.
Yeah, go ahead.
The three great wizards of the kings came upon the evil sorceress Gwendevere. Emphasis mine. You could pronounce that differently if you were in so interested. But my reaction to that was definitely whoa.
And this is, all right, I could be wrong about this, so please correct me, and I know you will.
Okay.
The sorceress had always wanted Sasha's sword, and this was the perfect time to get it. was that mentioned earlier
was
as
that
her
stated?
Motivation?
I mean, it is a special sword, I think, but...
She had so many times to tell her cat, like, all I have to do is get that sword, and then... I don't think it's ever come up before.
Yeah, right. Yeah, the cat should be rolling his eyes sarcastically and being like, a good time to have mentioned that would have been yesterday.
And so she gets it, and I guess this was her motivation all along, and I believe this is the first time. She said out loud to herself. Okay.
Sure.
I just noticed that.
Right.
It is finally mine. I now have the most powerful, most magnificent sword in all the land of Antigua. I have waited a long time to possess you, my beauty.
Wow.
You belong to me and my love, and I am never letting you go. I shall use you to destroy all the inhabitants of the land of Antigua. Together we shall rule the entire land.
If that's something, I missed it as well. That's incredible.
I swear that's the first time.
I honestly think it is. Is Sasha being like, I was holding what now? Like, is that why I was able to, you know, defeat all these people so quickly and easily?
I guess. I mean, it would be like in the third Lord of the Rings film, you know, like bites the ring off and then it's like, ha-ha, I actually wanted that switchblade in your backpack.
Right.
You didn't know that, you idiot.
Or as... Yeah, Gollum's falling into the fire, just being like, "It does what now?" that's quite a reveal, and I think you're correct. Unfortunately,
yeah.
She holds it for all of what, 10 seconds before
at most.
Yeah, before the wizard Vlandorf says, "I don't think so, sorceress." So maybe he's assuming the role of the sarcastic cat there.
Yeah. he takes it immediately away from her and just gives it back to... It's just like a puff of smoke or something, and that's it.
And so she's just proclaimed it as being, you know, the key to the kingdom, the all-powerful thing. And so when he gives it right back to Sasha, it says, Sasha smiles. She was pleased to have her special sword back in her own hands. The sword meant a lot to her, and she didn't want it to wind up in the hands of the evil sorceress. Sasha knew that the evil sorceress... would only use her sword for evil. So that's airtight logic, and it's the sort of There's a couple things in this section that I'm like, you couldn't make them up if you were trying to write a, you know, quote unquote bad book. And this is just the sort of, you know, elementary school, like that sort of innocent first grader writing a book thing that you really only get from the Ellises here.
Yes, I did not tax Bridget at all with this one. There's just too much. But I said, can I please read you this one sentence that's coming up that I think encapsulates the Ellis touch in a way that is just, just beautiful.
It's fantastic.
So she curses. She's very angry. She was so angry.
She had the key to her whole plan in her hand. She's been fighting the whole book for that sword, as we know, and it just is taken away from her.
Her secret plan to rule and defeat everyone. So making all those, the welders making those metal swords, steel swords?
Sure.
Steel weapons.
Yeah, or the trolls, sorry.
Yeah. Was all a diversion. And then all the thing about first she was going to take prisoners, then she said, hey, new plan, no prisoners, kill everyone.
Mm-hmm.
That was all just a diversion. That was all just her whole plan all along was just to snatch the sword out of her hand. So then when it doesn't happen, she has it for, you know, she has it for less than, like we said, 10 seconds. Naturally, she was so angry she could barely contain herself. She clenched her fists up into the air and cursed the wizards. The wizard Vlandorf yelled back, "No, sorceress, it is you who will pay. You shall pay for all the torment and suffering that you have caused." What was the curse?
Yeah, we missed out a whole curse. I mean, presumably she says you'll pay for this.
I guess, but
based on the context clues here.
But that would have been hilarious if you just completely misquoted her.
Yeah, right.
She was like, "I will reach down your throat, pull your guts out, and tie them around your neck and hang you from a tree."
Yeah.
"No, sorceress, it is you who will pay." Hey, don't editorialize, man.
Yeah, right, yeah. And that's not even like, you got to escalate these curses here. That's pretty weak stuff if you're just coming back with "you will pay" if she's threatening to, you know, salt the fields and, you know, kill your children and choke you with your own intestines.
Right. It's the, once again, we referenced it before, the over-the-top curse.
Yes.
"Damn you," to which Sylvester Stallone replies,
"No, damn you."
Oh, you got me.
Yeah, right. "You're also, I'm up here in a balcony. I couldn't really hear you."
Yes.
But so her curses and her fist clinching up to the heavens is all sets the stage for, I just have a note here. It says the beginning of one of my favorite things in the entire book.
Oh, yes.
It's the sort of thing that you read it once and you're like, well, all right, that's funny. And then it just keeps happening, which is, he says, you know, you'll pay for the death and destruction that the Blue Dragon Vorlsword caused. And then it says, "The sorceress used the powers of her mighty wand to push the wizard Vlandorf into a tree." She pointed her magic wand at him, and suddenly a force powerful enough to lift him up off the ground and force him right into a tree. He moaned as his body was thrown into the tree. And so that's pretty funny. You can imagine sort of like the Harry Potter thing, and then the tree, like, you know, splinters around him and he gets up and sort of does like the neck crick type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And how does he respond to this? "He wasn't hurt badly enough to stop him, though. He got up and pointed his magic wand at the evil sorceress Guinevere. A force came out of his magic wand that was powerful enough to force the sorceress Guinevere into another tree." So there are this battlefield also has a lot of trees around it. So, and I mean, I guess obviously it's the Great Plains of Antigua, so it's littered with mountains.
It's littered with trees. Yes.
She was lifted up. Oh, go ahead.
Well, just pointing out the wording here, you read it. I'll read it again with emphasis. "A force came out of the magic wand that was powerful enough to force the sorceress Guinevere into another tree. She was lifted up into the air and forced right into the tree."
And then what happens? "She fell to the ground and moaned in agony. He then used his magic wand to push the sorceress into a second tree." The sorceress Guinevere was forced through the air again. "The great wizard Vlandorf used his wand to flip the sorceress around and around in the air and then forced her into the second tree." So yeah, there's pushing and there's forcing. So to me, a force sounds more intense than a push. So he's maybe, you know, he realized he just forced her into one tree. The second time, he better push her just to, you know, he doesn't want to kill her. He's just trying to make a point here.
Well, I nominated this. I wrote this down as, you know, the I think it was done with Jim Tice, and also the Inklings did it with Irene Iddesleigh.
Yes.
Of giving certain sections to a person. Once you've convinced them that it's real, and then read as far as you can without laughing. The pushing and forcing each other into various trees is my nomination. There's no way you could read that without laughing.
It was truly laugh out loud music, just because it keeps building and it keeps happening. And they do the Ellis thing of, you know, telling you what they're going to tell you, and then telling you what they told you.
I guess on some level, one of my favorite comedy things ever is a Warner Brothers where Bugs Bunny falls off a cliff for, you know, 45 seconds.
Yeah.
And it's just various. It's done beautifully. Like, there's shots from, you know, a mile away. There's shots under his, you know, where his mouth is covering the whole camera, you know. Uh-huh. And it just goes on and on. And, you know, it gets funnier and funnier. And I read somewhere that the guys in the back lot who made that actually have a cut of it where it's way
wow, longer. Nice. Yeah.
And it doesn't exist. I've looked. I can't find it anywhere. But maybe they're doing that. Like, it is at a certain point, like, I shall force you into a second tree. it is kind of funny.
Yeah, to me, the whole thing smacked of Larry. He had just seen, you know, Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon or something. That had a lot of, like, trees going on, right? So then he's just sure. Like, we got to force him into a tree. That's great. That'll look great in the movie when we make a movie. And then he wakes up and she forces him back into a tree. And then she gets up and she's like, oh, you did not just force me into a tree. And then he forces her into a tree. Put Larry, it in there, Denise.
Larry, you're stuck on trees. Can we do something else? What's wrong with trees? What do you got? Let's switch it up to, oh, suddenly there's rocks everywhere. No, it's a tree. It's just a stay a tree.
Yeah, they're on the plains, and that's where the trees are. Force them into a tree. You push them into a tree, and then you force them into a tree.
And then what? I'm not going to tell you nothing. Oh, I just dropped my cigarette ash down my shirt. Hang on.
Larry's a smoker, okay. I thought maybe a cigar guy, but...
It was a cigar. Okay. It was a cigar ash, yeah.
And the whole tree thing is sort of happening here, and everyone's you know, using lightning bolts, and they're forcing things, they're off their feet, they're flying around, they're splintering trees, but they need to, like, turn up the power on these things, because we keep getting information like this. He flew through the air and landed right on his face. He was bruised and banged up a little, but he wasn't hurt badly. He got up on his own. And then it says, like, Vlandorf dropped her back on the ground. Guinevere landed right on her back. The sorceress moaned in pain. She was injured, but not badly enough to give up. So it's like, you know, is the battery low here? What's going on?
Injuries are very vague in this book. We get a lot of injuries. We get a lot of people passing out and then waking up. But they seem to have only a rudimentary grasp of how injuries and consciousness work and how you go in and out of them. So that'll be a theme from now on.
Yeah. But then pretty much the wizard Zrantor has been watching Vlandorf and Guinevere battle back and forth. And he yells out, enough of this. Next, the wizard Vlandorf pointed his magical wand at the sorceress and tossed her up into the air. She flew up into the air. Well, what's something that flies up into the air that you're familiar with? If you were going to describe this action here.
Bird kites.
Bird kites. Oh, sure. Evil bird kites. Yeah.
Yeah.
Or like a rocket or something. No, she flew up into the air like a spinning top. So like that thing that we, you know, from the end of Inception, we it's well known that, you know, the spinning tops eventually fly up into the air as they spin on a table.
You got to keep those things lashed to the table, otherwise they fly around.
And at that exact moment, the wizard Thandorfer called upon the clouds of the sky to release lightning. The sky thundered. Suddenly, a large bolt of lightning came from the sky and struck the sorceress. She let out a loud scream. She fell from the sky and died. So they just decide, they're like, okay, enough dicking around. Boom, she's dead. Like, I guess maybe if she had the sword, it might have repelled the lightning. But alas, alack, the dragon Voraltrar and the evil sorceress Guinevere were no longer a threat to the land of Antigua and its inhabitants.
That happened so quickly that I did do the, you know, couple exclamation points like, well, that's that. But I did go back and notice, and I'm going to be petty. I'm sorry.
Okay.
It wasn't lightning. It was lightning.
Oh, sure. Right. Yes.
something that lightens something else came from the sky.
Yep. I think that's it's sort of like in Game of Thrones where Sir was written S-E-R, so it's a different thing than a Sir S-I-R knight. I think this is just a fantasy, you know, old-timey lightning
that lightning,
only exists in Antigua.
Yes.
It's their thunder snow.
Yes, I believe there's an alternate spelling that I've seen in old-timey books of dam is D-A-M-M-E.
Wow.
Dammy. So then the Panthers, what are they?
Yeah, the Black Panthers.
The Black Panthers attack, or are going to attack the wizards, but here's some pure Ellis for you. The lion Thorn ran as fast as he could toward the wizards to protect them. He almost didn't make it. He was almost too late. Just choose one or the other. Just really don't need to.
Right, especially because he, of course, does make it, and yes, it's not like you're ending a chapter Dan Brown style on one page and starting a next one like that. But we all know that he gets there. He fights the Black Panthers. He bit into the flesh of the Panthers. They bit him right back. The Lion Thorn wounded the two Black Panthers. The two Black Panthers wounded the Lion Thorn. So it's honestly like a, you know, see Dick run, see Spot run level, you know, first grade reading primer at this point in time.
Yes, that did make me laugh. They bit him right back.
But then he does something that the Panther is unable to do back to him. That's right. The Lion picked up one of the Panthers in his mouth and threw him against a tree.
Yes.
It's so perfect. The Panther was badly injured and could fight no longer. It could hardly catch its breath. It had no choice but to run away. The Black Panther got up and limped away. And then the Lion Thorn ran and jumped into the air and landed right on top of the other Black Panther. As he did, he let out a loud roar. The Black Panther took one last breath and then died at the mighty jaws of the Lion Thorn.
Right.
No tree, you know, throwing a corpse into the tree was probably just considered, you know, petty at that point in time.
Oh, I'd like that panther was, you would assume, like, that panther was badly injured and could no longer fight. Mm-hmm. It's like, all right, so what was that injury? Can we please zoom in on these injuries?
Right.
As people get thrown forcefully against trees.
Right, a shattered, you know, panther pelvis or something, like a compound fracture of one of its hind legs.
Right. So then Jonathan was standing in the chariot.
Sure.
Which I'd forgotten about because he just and that stood sounds, in the chariot.
I didn't know there was a chariot. That's for sure. And you make it sound abrupt. That's exactly what happens. The lion kills the panther. It's cut to Jonathan in a chariot.
Yes. And he's there with the cat, with Sarcastic Cat.
Of course.
And for some reason, they do not have the knowledge that the sorceress has died.
Mm-hmm.
You would think that this would be, you know, the heavens themselves.
Yeah, yeah. The black
obliterated
clouds dissipate.
Her
yeah.
With a large bolt of lightning. So I don't know why they don't know, but they don't know. The cat says, "The sorceress Guinevere will surely destroy you if you leave this chariot." Jonathan, who was sick of listening to the cat, yelled out, "Shut up, you stupid cat!" He threw a coat right on top of her. Did not expect the chariot of the great sorceress, the late great sorceress Guinevere, to have a coat just sitting there.
Right, yeah. It's, I mean, maybe she just, you know, has those in case they go through the colder parts of the north. But that Jonathan knows that that's the trick for, you know, you put a parakeet in its cage at night to sleep by putting the coat over it. So he knows that's the way to shut up Sarcastic Cats.
I hope it was like on the side of the chariot. It's like a rack, like at, you know, when you go to cabins or something. And there was like a nice saying, like, "Keep warm at our cabin." There's just a bunch of coats on like very thick pegs of wood right on the side of the chariot.
Right. Or Jonathan looks, there's two racks. One says "keep warm coats." The other one says "cat shutting up coats."
But the cat, let me read this one. "I shall put a stop to you. I shall put you out of revenge for the sorceress Guinevere and the dragon Voltar. After I have finished with you, my young friend, I shall finish off your friends."
That's Gozarf, right?
Gozarf. Yes. Why does no one know?
I don't know. I thought it would be sort of like, you know, when the Wicked Witch dies and Gozarf's like, "Well, thank you, you know, Sir Vlandorf.
Yeah.
Like, you have freed us from her horrible curse." Like,
yeah. Okay. I just didn't understand why some knew and some others are unaware. Aren't they sort of standing in the same thing? Or I guess we need someone to draw out this battle.
Sure, yeah.
Like it was Antietam or something. We need to see, you know, where's the ditch and then the road and the cornfield. And
where did the 200 archers stand? Where did the 100 archers stand? Where did the panther get thrown into a tree, et cetera?
Where was Tina when Sanford was shooting, et cetera?
Well, Jonathan returns to the to his other two wizard apprentices, William and Brandon, and they sort of forgive each other. And he says it's good to see the two of them alive. They sort of smile and think like, oh, like, you know, he's back, even though he tried to betray the entire kingdom by signing up with a sorceress. They just do one of those.
It's great, though, because he walks up to them and wordlessly and they say, it's like an internal monologue. He wanted them to know that it was his own insecurities that made him act the way he did. He was truly sorry for his behavior. He was especially sorry for the way he treated the wizard Brandon. Okay, that's all just internal stuff. As he stands next to them, very next paragraph, all of that is then said out loud again. It was my own insecurities that made... And I was thinking that they all looked at each other and just understood this, you know, just side eyes to one another, like, we're back, you know, the threesome is back. But no, they explicitly say it later.
And that's it. They say the three of them knew exactly what to do without saying a word to each other before a paragraph of him explaining his entire motivation and inner monologue.
Yes.
This was a very confusing sentence, and this happens a couple times with this actually specific action. It says, the three wizards pointed their wands at Gozarf and twirled them around in a circle. And so it's referring to their wands being twirled around in a circle, but the way it's written makes it sound like Gozarf uses they, them pronouns. They pointed their wands at Gozarf and twirled them around in a circle if they were like spinning him around. So, and they do that again with the wands, I think. There's a second time where they are described as twirling someone around, but it's actually referring to their wands' action. And guess what happens after they've tossed Gozarf around?
I have in bold. I truly laughed out loud for real. So please read it and I will laugh out loud again.
Gozarf was lifted up into the air and spun around like a spinning top. So he is spinning around, but it's, you know, anyway. Yeah. Gozarf spun around and around in the air. The wizards then flipped him back and forth in the air. Gozarf screamed out as the wizards tossed him about. He fell to the ground and dropped his sword. He stood up and was ready to bend over and pick his sword up. Suddenly, Gozarf was lifted up into the air again by the young wizard's magic wands and tossed across the field into a tree where he died.
Dear God.
That's how Gozarf's got to go. It's people like a trees.
Larry, this fight is taking place in the middle of the field. There are no trees.
Well, they can toss them far. I mean, they flew on their wands all to get the, you know, rescue that island. So it's the trees far away, but it doesn't matter. That's how they throw him that far.
Spin him in the air and drop him on the ground. Is that not enough to cause injury?
No, it's not enough. They got to toss him back and forth, you know, like they're playing ping pong with him. And then they throw him into a tree.
Not a lightning. Okay, fine. I'll put another tree.
Maybe it's that talking tree from a couple chapters ago. That was a good character.
No, Larry, we're not writing the monkey in again. Not until later.
He does come back, though. That's Larry's got that up his sleeve.
That's true.
And then, he apologizes. He says they accept the apology immediately, saying, hey, you know, Jonathan, don't be so hard on yourself. We don't consider you to be a traitor, and there's absolutely nothing for you to be ashamed about. And I was hoping that, King Arthur was going to step up and be like, not so fast, boys.
Right.
Absolutely, we're going to execute him because that's, you know, high treason. That's,
yes.
You guys don't get to decide that.
No, you do not have this power. We have laws in this land for a reason. So this is a curious fact because this can't come out of nowhere. In fact, Brandon had prayed for Jonathan's safe return back to them.
Wow, I didn't notice that.
To who?
Yeah.
Like who's in charge here?
Yeah. So he's a wizard who also, you know, believes in a almighty that responds to prayer.
I mean, he could be, maybe it's just a Buddhist prayer or something. I don't know.
Yeah. It's just a delight anytime something like that gets that's thrown into one of these, because it just answers, it raises so many more questions that these authors clearly are not capable of answering. And, you know, there are all sorts of life and death situations before. Was he praying for Jonathan when he betrayed them and left to go to the north? Was he, you know, praying for him to be righted or to see the light or just for his own safety?
Larry was a lapsed Catholic, and like then he thought of his grandma, you know, who used right. to work the rosary beads for him. So he was like, well, at some point, you better throw in a prayer or something in case my grandma reads it. Like, I guess he could have prayed for him. Yeah, that's good. That's good. Oh, should we flesh it out at all? Because it raises a lot of questions. Flesh it out. We're all Catholics.
Yeah, they pray. I mean, you know, they got God in Welsh, right?
Yes.
Charlie, he's their god. I realized that Charlie was probably just Larry and Denise bickering on whether Charlie was like Charlie L-I-E or Charlie L-E-Y, and they just like they came to it, they butted heads so much that they decided just to combine the two.
Right.
Then we get, speaking of, you know, sort of prayers and mysticism, suddenly everyone on the battlefield could see someone running toward them. As it got closer and closer, they knew who it was. It was the head centaur of the unicorns, who was a centaur.
I nominate that as the dumb sentence of the century, yeah, please.
I believe that was nominated quite a bit, and that was another one where I was like, again, if you were trying to fake this, you would be out of your league, because this is pure uncut bad writing.
Who, I am happy to report, I don't think this will spoil anything, gets an official title a little bit later as the female head of the centaurs.
Yes, they...
Which becomes then, I did a search on it, and that becomes the official title of her later. And it's the first time it's mentioned, I think, is the next time she's mentioned is called that.
So. Yeah, I did not recall seeing that before, and then it was just a very odd, you know, just thing to slip in there.
Yes.
I mean, maybe they were concerned that, you know, the centaur boy Euclepsis was going to be like eyeing her or something, so they wanted to make it clear to all this.
Gotcha. Then we get a very curious thing here is the, I didn't realize how many people, I guess you could imagine that people had been injured and died.
On the good side, yeah.
I assume most of them were shaken up a bit, but unhurt and ready to fight again.
Right.
But we're informed that no, there was quite a few injuries and deaths here.
Yeah.
But the female head of the centaurs has, she has the remedy. And is kind of burying the lead here, right? She says, I have a remedy that can bring all of them back to restored health.
Uh-huh.
Oh, well, that's good, because
sure, yeah.
We have a lot of injured.
Bump on my head when he threw me into a tree.
The same remedy can also bring back your dead.
What?
Would you read those in the opposite order?
Right. So, yeah, they have a lot of dead and injured people, and she has a bottle of sparkling gold dust that she sort of pulls out and pours a small amount into her right hand and then blows it out, and everyone just sort of gets up and, you know, they rise up off the ground and stand up, and all the fatally wounded were restored to life.
Yep, with the help of the fairy who, you know, used the wind to kind of blow it around.
Oh yeah, she she's like, oh, I don't know, I'm all tapped out with this, but I guess I can. No.
Yeah, so it's like reverse mustard gas, and everyone comes back to life. The queen, however, this is a good sentence. The queen winked her eye at the fairy. So I'm glad she was winking her eye. And yeah, I don't
right.
know what...
yeah, well, the fairy's winking something else at her. So,
yeah, exactly.
But then Rebecca's concerned, rightfully. She's like, whoa, how come it doesn't wake up, you know, Gwendevyr and Voltrar? Oh, the magic dust only works on those with a pure heart. And then it says, the land of Antigua had all its inhabitants back. And I was just wondering, like, so is this just the battlefield? Or is someone, you know, is a peasant from that village that Voltrar bulldozed being like, hey, my four-year-old died of pneumonia last week. Is it not out of dust? Sorry.
Right. Get your own fairy to spread it around, pal.
But the female head centaur of the unicorns did say that Antigua is now safe until the next prophecy must be fulfilled. And I believe we hashed this out maybe in the Patreon mailbag last week, that we weren't certain the time frame of that. Because there was that other dragon rider who defeated another evil sorceress and her dragon.
Yes.
But that was, they had destroyed, I think, like Jonathan or William's village. So it was within the past, you know, 10 years or so that there was another dragon like this. So it does sort of end like an episode of an 80s cop show where it's like, you know, well, we've defeated this bad guy and then there's going to be another bad guy next week.
Right.
And that pans out because they're we get into some crazy stuff in these next few chapters. I believe that's how this chapter ends, though.
Oh, I don't have the... I wasn't reading the hardcovers. I was just reading straight on through.
All of the knights, men from all the provinces, centaurs and mini-wads, cheered and raised their swords up into the air to signify their victory over the evil sorceress Gwendevyr and the dragon Voraltrar. It was a proud moment for them all.
Oh, yes. And then they were all heroes. Each and every inhabitant of the land of Antigua was a hero.
So it's the land of, you know, knock a couple words out of the title there. The land of fairies, wizards, and heroes. The fairies and wizards are, by this definition, heroes. So it's the land of heroes.
But there has to be someone on that battlefield who, you know, it's like when you know, the teacher is like, well, you're all doing really good.
Yeah.
And I'm sitting there going, I know I'm not.
No, right, yeah.
Fuck. I got a 60 on this test.
My mouth is full of paste at the moment.
Yeah, so there has to be someone on the battlefield going like, I immediately stabbed my own toe and was stuck to the ground.
Yeah, it's the equivalent
of not a hero.
Splitting the check, going out with someone, and then someone's like, I just ordered fries, and he's eating a lobster over there, and I saw him have two martinis, so this doesn't seem fair to divvy this up this way.
All right, so where does this chapter start?
3 days later is where it starts. They're back at the castle of King Arthur and Queen Eleanor Dora.
Gotcha. This is where they get the note from the kingdom up to the west. No, the east, right? Eastern?
Sure. I thought everyone was still there. I thought it was the note from the head center of the unicorns.
It is. Okay. And that's what made me laugh is... Okay. It's just like an RSVP, because they had talked already. It was like, hey, we're going to go start partying.
Yeah.
The head centaur, the unicorns, said, yeah, sounds good. I'll follow right after you. And then there's a thing where a unicorn flies in and hands a note to them as they're all sitting there. The knight Sir Barrington put a pin in that, walked over to one of the unicorns and took a note right out of its mouth. And then it's just, I won't read the whole thing, it's just a little RSVP. My Lord King Arthur, again, congratulations, royal families must be happy. Can't wait to get there, I'm going to be there before nightfall. Signed, the head centaur of the unicorns. It struck me as so, like, Napoleon Dynamite, like, there's more where that came from if you go to the prom with me. This is the head centaur. Yes, I know it's the head centaur of the unicorns.
Okay, yeah, the head centaur of the unicorns. Okay, Gary, come on, just...
The unicorn flies in, gives them the note. It says all the things they had just talked about.
Who might this be from?
Can you guess? Yeah, that's right. It's me, the head centaur of the unicorns.
I did. I once you told me about this, I looked it up in the book, and the way that they indicate this was a letter in the paperback copy was by making the entire note underlined to set it off.
As letters always are.
Yes. Hey, maybe that's how unicorns communicate. You never know.
Ah, that's, again, that's the Larry touch.
The King Arthur, it did specify that when the knights knew the unicorns were coming, so they didn't try to stop the unicorns from entering the castle. So I wondered if there was some sort of, you know, tension there from a side door that the unicorns have to use type of thing. But then King Arthur finishes reading that note and says out loud, and it's hard not to imagine it through clenched teeth. So, the head centaur of the unicorns, inner unicorns, will be here to celebrate with us. Good. I am very happy about that.
Well, we quickly zoom over to, pan over to Rebecca and Wizard William, who are strolling through the gardens. And as you know, of course, I think we assume they're going to end up together, right?
Yeah, they did that long-ass walk from a couple chapters before, so they've been spending some time together.
But there's a lot of friend zoning going on in this little. I'm going to miss you too. You've been very kind to me. Really looked after me during my stay here. And he's like, yeah, If it weren't for you, I don't think I would have liked being here at all. As she's sort of trying to find a way to get her hand out of his.
Yeah. Like,
how do I do this without being? She like coughs and then doesn't take his hand back.
It is like she's working up the nerve to be like, and I can just tell you things that I can't tell anyone else. Like the fact that I have a huge crush on that bad boy, Jonathan.
Right.
And this is the other couple. I mean, we've already... It pans over to the other side of the garden where the other friend zoning, Princess Alexandra and Timothy, are happening. So this is the only way, I guess, they know how to write relationships.
I don't know why we just got nearly the identical thing. Except for... So Timothy, he's in the friend zone already. He knows.
Yeah.
And yet they have the weird thing where, like, yeah, maybe someday I'll marry you.
Yes. But acknowledged by their parents, even.
But Timothy, if I could coach you, like, if we were roommates, dude.
Right.
I would be watching from the side going, oh, God, don't do that. No.
If you were the horny roommate in a James Wynn movie or something.
Yes. She says to him, you're so silly, Timothy. Timothy let her hands go and ran through the garden. Oh, Timothy.
Yeah, come on. Yeah.
As he did flips in the air. Princess Alexandra laughed at her friend.
Oh, no. Come on, man. Like,
dude.
Gymnasts are not the bad boy she's looking for here.
I can do flips, Alexandra.
Wee!
Look at me. And then, do you like me more now?
What's that? Oh, flips. Yeah, that's great. I'm just texting with Jonathan as well. It's me and Rebecca and Jonathan are, yeah, that's
Jonathan's nothing but eggplant.
Yes.
Emojis to both of them. Yeah.
You know, I'm texting Rebecca too. Oh, that's fine, whatever you're into. But then it says, it specifies Princess Alexandra ran after her close friend Timothy, and when they both caught up to each other, they both laughed and hugged each other. And so He goes right into it. He says, we can be together forever. I want to marry you, Princess Alexandra. I want to marry you now. And she says, that's sweet, Timothy, but we will not be getting married now. I'm only 17. I need more time, but I promise you that when the time is right, I will accept your proposal. So it's sort of a, I don't know what to make of it.
It really is like there was a woman in college that I was very in love with. And at one point a friend sat me down and was like, dude, she does not like you. I was like, how do you know? He's like, 'cause she told me.
Wow. Nice.
She came to my room and said, could you let him know?
Wow.
Now I was, to be clear, there was no stalking or she was in a play with me. So it wasn't, So I saw her a lot, but I was like, okay, gotcha.
You scrapped your plan to play Wonderwall on your lute outside of her dorm window or something.
Right. So I did the manly thing, and I drank a lot and punched parking meters that night and then tried to phone her from the jail. Oh. So that was a fiction. What?
Wow. That's you had a roommate named Larry Ellis that you're like, that name sounds familiar. It goes from the friend zoning then, like everyone's celebrating, and then it does one of the more jarring smash cuts, I believe, in all of literature, when it says everyone's partying. Most of the inhabitants of the land of Antigua were there. Only the inhabitants of a few villages and the rebels from the village of Wild Willows didn't attend the great celebration. And so that's warranted all caps what with 10 exclamation marks and question marks. And I assume that was sort of an Ellis throwaway. It does come back, of course, in grand fashion. But it says, as the great celebration continued... In the kingdom of King Arthur, in the westernmost province in the land of Antigua, the sister of the evil sorceress Guinevere grieved the death of her only sister. No one in the land of Antigua even knew that the sorceress had a sister. Guinevere's sister, the sorceress Arlisandra, cried when she heard the news of her sister's death. So, as you alluded to before, the thing that we obsessed over, the family of the evil sorceress Gwendevyr that rarely visited, in their own words, does exist and is now becomes the main character of the final chapters of Antigua.
And the daughter's name, it sounds like someone who would have a very successful TikTok makeup tutorial or something. Uh-huh. Bianca.
Princess Bianca, yes.
She's 18.
And so, yeah, she's upset. So, I mean, just to... It truly goes completely off the rails from this point forward. It essentially gives us what would be in, like, a Marvel movie of, you know, the Green Goblin's son in Spider-Man is killed. His son is James Franco, right? The post-credit mm-hmm. sequence, he, you know, picks up the mask, looks at it, an evil expression comes upon his face, as they say, and cut to black. We know that he's going to be the villain in the next movie.
Correct.
We get that for probably 10,000 words here. Characters we've never met before. Characters that no one in the kingdom even knew existed before, introduced after what we thought was going to be the whole battle took place and everything had ended.
Truly, truly amazing. And especially since Arlisanda mm-hmm. is very similar to one of the early characters. I started sleuthing character names at this okay. point because you just feel like, look, we took a long time to read this. I want to be fair about this. There was a character earlier who had a similar sounding name, but this is... of course, the first time
okay.
that this name is actually mentioned.
Good.
Although, as you mentioned, the obtuse reference to it. But this is her, I'm assuming she's clenching her fists in the air while she does this. Each and every inhabitant of this land shall pay for what they have done to my sister Gwendevyr and the great dragon Voltor. And as you recall, each and every one of them in the land is a hero.
Oh, wow.
She doesn't know what she's up against there.
Or that they, if she does try to make them pay, there's just some unicorn dust that a fairy can fart all over the land to make it right the wrong. But you alluded to Brandon had been praying earlier. Princess Bianca comes in, bows her head to her mother, and walks out of the castle. She closed her eyes and meditated. Suddenly, her dragon, Aldestant, appeared. So she meditates. She goes into a realm of deep concentration and focus, and that's how her her dragon is able to be summoned.
Yes, and it does. And she says, she pulled her sword. Oh, doesn't it something like, what took you so long? Oh, maybe that's with the later dragon.
Okay, yeah.
I'll save that for the later.
Because it's
dragons.
Not the last dragon we're going to meet here, folks.
No.
Because we then smash forward to this. Back at the village of Lady Alamage, she was laughing and running as she hit the ball in the game with her closest friends. Lady Alamage and her friends were all playing foot polo. And so, I mean, if you're a reasonable person who's just begging them to stop introducing characters because there's 18 pages left in the book, the Ellises are just getting started.
This is incredible, though. So, back at the village of...
Yeah,
so
right.
All right, we're going back to that. We never were there.
No.
And it's called the Village of Lady Alamage. Okay. Back at that village called the Village of Lady Alamage. She was laughing and running.
Yeah.
So it's her village?
It's another badly constructed sentence.
Okay. But that threw me off. Like, is there a place called the Village of Lady Alamage? Of course, there is not. It's very confusing, right?
Yeah. But we do get, if they're going to introduce characters here, they need to keep the names coming. And we do get some of my favorite character names in the entire book. We get her, Lady Alamage's friend, Natrasha, who was 19 years old, which is some real, like, you know, early aughts, like suicide girl, naming here. And, we get introduced to Nathan, who was also 17, but then we get Lady Alamage's friend, Benita, who was 18 years old. And I think we said it earlier, they all sound like the names when you listen to a character on Spontanea Nation or Comedy Bang Bang, and it's like, oh, and who are you? And they're like, my name is Benita. Pulling it right out of the air to come up with something utterly ridiculous. And then it caps it off Lady Alamage is very popular. She has lots of good friends. All of their ages are specified, but we do get to meet Lady Alamage's friend, Muffy.
That's not even mentioning Cantina.
Wow, yep.
And her best friend, Peter.
Oh, Peter, you say?
Yes. Yeah. So check out my, I have a Patreon on the Peter's got under my, you know, it was a raspberry seed in my wisdom tooth.
Mike was
stringing
looked it up. Yarn on his wall trying to figure out.
Yeah, there were pictures. There's Polaroids of different Peters up there. There are four distinct Peters in the book, so I imagined if they were all the same character, but they seem to be, it's just a name they pull out of the air.
But there wasn't even a Peter with two R's or anything, right?
No, all the exact same Peter.
Perfect.
And Pete was a best friend of, no more detail in some of the earlier ones, the best friend of Leonide, or whatever, Leonid, whatever.
Okay.
The wizard apprentice.
Got it.
Yeah, he was summoned from the other realm, remember, during the game?
That was a sub. That was a level above wizard apprentice. That was like a trainee. That was like their final.
Oh, right.
Final, yeah, okay. So yeah, he was the guy that was like summoned into some weird nether realm and then disappeared just as quickly.
Yes, yes. His name was Peter, too.
Great, perfect. Yeah, all these guys are going to get together in a bar afterwards. Just, you know, the gathering of the Peters. That could be Antigua Book 2.
And then we learn that she has, that Lady Alamage, who owns the village, has two sisters, Angelina and Sissy, who would like to dress up like dolls. And so Lady Alamage is amongst a gaggle of friends, right?
Well, yeah, it's a foot polo game. I mean,
at the foot polo game, and she says, you know, I have plenty of time to get ready. I don't need as much time as Angelina and Sicily. And then Lady Alamange's friend Nathan said sarcastically, we can see that. Why do we need a Nathan? We have a Peter and a Cantina and a Bethina.
And the Trasha.
The Trasha.
It's... Suddenly
Nathan is there being sarcastic like he's a cat or something.
Yeah, I can't think of anything else. We need to know whether the other book that a listener read, that where the teen archaeologist does this same sort of thing, just yes, various other teens with their ages specified, introduced throughout the entire book. I don't know.
But it's good to know after meeting these people, especially Angelina and Sissy, who we get a little snapshot of later. I mean, meeting them this late in the book, it's going to be great to meet them in book two. They're going to have nice, long lives. And it's just...
Yep. I mean, you know, their best friend,
good to
Peter,
meet him in Zoom.
Know,
yeah.
Plenty of time for him to be friend-zoned.
Ah, can't wait to see them grow up into the fine men and women that I know they're going to be.
Yeah, just doing volunteer work and, you know, 10-year plans they've got on their vision boards.
Right. Some of them writing self-help books that really do help, and fantastic.
One of them's worked out a low-cost water filter for, you know, the developing nations that don't have clean water supplies.
He's joined by his friend Nathan, who's into desalinization. Together, mm-hmm, they're able to literally change continents with
Muffy's working on a perpetual motion machine. People think she's a little sure weird, but it's kind of, you know, they follow your dreams, Muffy.
Right.
Well,
cheap and free energy for everyone. All right, well, let's see what happens.
Great. Yeah, let's do it. Well, it turns out she has a dragon that she's raised since she was a baby dragon. So there were just bonus dragons everywhere. You know, in Game of Thrones, it was sort of like dragons were a thing of, you know, of a forgotten time. So the fact that there was, you know, three new dragons was like a, you know, again, it was like a prophecy being fulfilled. But we just have, you know, Lady Alamage in her own village that she's raised a dragon. And we get a very important detail that I don't believe had happened earlier. She stood out in the field and waited. No word on whether she meditated to summon it. Suddenly, a large dragon landed right in front of her. That's great action. And the dragon said, "Hello, my lady. Are you ready to take a ride?" So the dragons have been able to talk this whole time, or maybe just hers.
I can only assume it's hers, although that makes maybe she painstakingly taught it.
Sure,
because
yeah,
because she raised it from a baby.
Yeah, that was her. You know, that was her project, as other people were working on their desal projects and all that.
Right, but the blue dragon, what was his name?
Voraltrar?
Voraltrar's been dead so long, I've forgotten him. Never said a mumbling word, right?
I don't think so. He just spit from his nose.
Sure, they all do that, yeah.
Well, this one is Agamora, and it's going to take her off to the head centaur, the female head centaur of the unicorns. Because yes. I guess she's gotten word that there has been a new prophecy that she has summoned Lady Alamaj to receive.
Yeah.
And the first thing they do is, as she gets there, the female head centaur of the unicorns grills her how old she is, which she says she's 17. And then the head centaur of the unicorns asks, and your sisters, how old are they? And she says, Angelina is 19 and Sissy is 16. So like the head centaur has got some, like, we're watching the movie Old now by M. Night Shyamalan. And there's this little wiener kid who asks every adult, what their name is and what their occupation is. So that's the head centaur has got some of that same energy.
But it's also, isn't it a little bit like a little bit of a car salesman energy or something? Uh-huh. Or, someone at Best Buy trying to put a
your tax
on
guy doing it every year when you get in.
How's it going, man? How's that? He's looking at his notes. How are Sissy and yes. It's like, look, if you know how old I am, you know my family. Yeah. And how old is that that other sister, Angelina, there? Like, you can figure it out. If you knew me, you'd know how old they are.
You have resurrection dust. Surely you must be able to keep track of this type of detail.
Yes.
I don't know. Then she reveals that there are new prophecies. They've always been part of our lives. We can never escape them. Not even you, your family, and your villagers can escape their fate. And so it's like, it does seem like the head center of the unicorns is that cult leader who sort of keeps moving the goalposts here. Because, if there was this prophecy that everyone is like, we did it. We defeated the sorceress. We're celebrating like no one's ever celebrated before. And then there's a new thing that's like, well, there's another sorceress that's like, well, we really, the world was going to end on, December 21st, 2012. All right. Well, that didn't happen, because what really is going to happen is it's going to end on 2014.
Yes, she is one of those, sets the doomsday thing and then changes it. Like, well, we misread verse 34 of the thing. Obviously, yes, yeah. It wasn't talking about that.
Yeah.
So,
Yeah, and that's just, once you're in the cult, like, you to everyone else, it's like, well, this is the biggest fraud. And to them, it's just like, oh, my God. Like, well, it just becomes even more proof that when something didn't happen.
Right. So she summons her and gives her the news. Hey, sorry, this new prophecy, pretty bad news for your family and your entire village.
Yeah.
And that leads to this sonic challenge.
Oh, boy.
Lady Alamaj screamed, what does this have to do with my family? Are my parents and my sisters in any danger? Tell me now.
Oh, man. Well, I think there's only one way to do that. Let me... I think you've got to... do that as a Harrison Ford voice. I mean, screaming about your family being in danger.
Yeah. What does this have to do with my family? Are my parents and sisters in any danger? Tell me now. Get off of my plane. Give me back my village.
I mean, I don't know. There's
that's good.
Little Lady Alamaj concerned about her family. And she says, that the prophecy states that the village and everyone in it will be destroyed out of revenge. So... thanks for coming. Have a great day. Oh, yeah. Say hello to check notes. Angelina and Sissy. Right. Yeah. Hope you see them again before they die.
So this would be like, though, I mean, does it really take a prophecy? This seems like a failure of both, military intelligence, that no one knew there was another queen.
Sure.
With another dragon. It's a little bit like, we've referenced it a lot in World War II, like you do the Doolittle raid, where planes actually reach the mainland of Japan didn't do a lot of damage, but psychologically it was like, we can reach you. Mm-hmm. And then the prophecy the next day is, hey, the Japanese are going to get revenge on the Chinese who built those landing strips where the bombers came and landed.
Okay.
Like, that's what the prophecy said. Right. Like, no, that's just how it works. Like, they're going to get revenge because that's what happened.
Right. Yes.
So this is the same thing. Like, did you really need a prophecy? Like, yeah, she's going to start kicking ass because she's mad.
Yeah, I guess it's, specific. There's no real reason to single out their village other than, their village isn't even attending the party at the end of it. They're the least involved in this whole thing. They're sort of like a neutral territory here. But
I mean, maybe she just really hates foot polo. I don't know.
Call it soccer, damn it. What are you trying to do here? But so she like takes off as fast as she can to get back to her village. But unfortunately, our Princess Bianca is already on her dragon, and Aldestan's going to burn it. So it sort of flashes back to the beginning of the book. It's a little cyclical thing of a village being destroyed by the dragon. Although this time, I think last time Voraltrar just burnt the village, but this time everyone dies.
Yes.
Not before it informs us, however, that the women in the land of Antigua wore hoop skirts underneath their skirts to hold them away from their bodies.
That was in fanfic.
So yeah, that's Sissy and Angelina having like a final like bickering before they're all incinerated from the fire spit from the dragon Aldestan's mouth and nostrils.
Yeah, I mean, in a book where in the final battle, the epic showdown where, after the fact, we learn that some people were hurt and some died, but they're immediately resuscitated with fairy dust. This one is just like, no one was able to escape the flames spit out by the dragon. Everyone in the village perished, including Lady Alamaj's entire family.
Yeah, so it's got...
So just roasted to death, like combing her hair and watching her boar's hair brush just ignite as her flesh melts off of her skull.
Right. Their shadows are burned into the walls of the castle. Like, it's got the adagio for strings playing.
And the fact that... So... I guess this was the prophecy, but the female head centaur of the unicorns called her away, so she had no chance to do anything. So yeah. is she in on it?
I think it was, if the prophecy was that, like, you know, you have to revenge this, then, you know, that's why you had to not be there when it happened. Like, you know, you can't get in the way of the prophecy, that type of thing, like a Matrix-y kind of thing, maybe.
It seems a little cruel, like, yeah. You know, it's not my job to actually make the prophecy happen,
right.
You know, I'm just one of Macbeth's three witches, I'm just telling you the information I'm getting, but instead, like, actively, like, no, let her burn,
right.
let her burn to the ground.
Yeah, the important thing is that she doesn't allow any horses in her kingdom, that's where she really draws the line, that's her moral stance.
Oh, good for her.
We get this pretty fun. So just to take a step back, like, it sounds normal that we're discussing this, but this is still the same book that we were talking about 30 minutes ago. That now it has sentences like this. Princess Bianca saw Lady Alamaj and her dragon Agamora advancing through the sky toward them. She pulled out her sword and yelled, "After them, Aldestan." Lady Alamaj pulled out her own sword and was prepared to battle Princess Bianca. She had no idea who Princess Bianca was or why she had just burned down her village. It's like, well, join the club, lady. This is not something that, you know, anyone else in the book would understand at this point in time, but it's happening. We just got to keep reading.
Oh, I pulled that out too. So great. Like, and I really, and because you're reading it, you know, on an ebook, again, I'm not looking ahead to see how much I have. Obviously, when it gets to the celebratory meals and everything, I'm assuming, like, well, I've got, you know,
right,
three start pages skimming. Left.
Yeah, exactly.
And suddenly, you know, Princess Bianca's riding dragons as part of my reality. That was so great. Like, what? And then searching their names, and it's saying, this is the first reference of this princess. There will be 154 more.
It was incredible. Yeah.
I was like, that is impossible. That means that half the words in this book from here on out are going to be Bianca.
Right. And it, you know, it did inspire, you know, hope that Rebecca was going to, you know, never return home or something like that. But we'll have to see what happens to her.
So it's a sky battle of dragons. And you get this curious sentence. The two dragons spit balls of fire at each other, but they were careful not to let the fire reach either Princess Bianca or Lady Alamaj. So what is the physics of this? So each dragon is protecting the other one's lady? Or we're supposed to assume evasive maneuvers?
Yeah,
understand.
Sort of a square is a rectangle, but a rectangle isn't a square, you know what I mean? Like, they're spitting them at each other, but they're also making sure it doesn't let, that their other ones don't hit the princess. I don't know.
I challenge anyone,
right,
to
it's
figure
a terrible
out.
It does not compute. The computer errors out on when it tries to make that happen. But it does have this sentence: Princess Bianca and Lady Alamaj was sword fighting with each other while riding on their dragons up in the sky. And it is just like you have to put the book down and take a walk at this point in time, this close to the end, and this is getting sprung on you.
I mean, I assume that many people wrote that in as a dumb sentence of the week.
Yeah, oh yeah, definitely. It was 100% submitted by multiple people. Here's a great exchange. This is a it's just a very, very funny thing. So Lady Alamage, is everyone she knows is dead. She's distraught with grief, but she's also in the middle of a battle for her life on a dragon, and she's yelling this: "Who are you? Why did you destroy me, family, friends, and my entire village? What have we done to you? Who is your aunt?" So that's how she's pinning this down. And then Princess Bianca yells back, you know, explaining that her aunt was Windevier, her only sister, who is my mother, the sorceress Arla Sandra, who no one knows exists, wants everyone to pay. So we're just we're sorting that all out. Eventually, I guess they get off their dragons, and Princess Bianca bent down and punched Lady Alamage in the face so hard that she became unconscious. So Bianca's kind of a badass here. She's the gloves are off.
That's the first. A lot of slapping.
Yeah, exactly. The slapping so tails off towards the end of this.
But here's where I want, you know, more detail. Princess Bianca got the better of Lady Alamage and injured her. Very passive phrase. Her wounds were not life-threatening, but she was still hurt badly. Detail, please.
Yeah, right.
Was this, you know, they're sword fighting, so was it the thing where you cut their tendon behind them, you know?
Uh-huh.
And then they can't walk anymore, and then, like, what happened? It was not life-threatening.
The old, like, cheek slash, like, you know, 1, 2, 3 cuts, like a Zorro carved into her.
Yeah.
I don't know, it's but that's very reminiscent of the tree-forcing battle is all that. He was forced into a tree. He was hurt really badly, but he was okay.
And then, so they have sort of their standoff, and I forget who says this. I think this is our hero, our heroine. "My only goal in life now is to find and destroy you." That's a great thing to say to someone who you're currently looking directly at. Well, part one has been accomplished.
Right. If that's your only goal, that's pretty, you're on the right track.
Yeah.
And it's sad, but the dragon Agamora was not much for the story. It says she had never been in a battle before. She was just used to flying around the land of Antigua with Lady Alamage on her back. The dragon Agamora lost the battle against the dragon Aldestant. Great description. The dragon Agamora fell to the ground near Lady Alamage and died. And we've established that it can talk. We could have had some sort of dying words or something.
Oh,
like,
man, yes.
"Kill that person's aunt."
Oh, maybe who is your aunt is, you know, like, who's your daddy kind of a thing. Yeah. That's what they scream in that place.
Yeah. "Call me aunt." She's punching her in the face. But then, you know, it does have more payoff. It says, in order to go that far, okay, no one in the land of Antigua had ever been that far north before. In order to go that far north, they would have had to pass through the kingdom of the sorceress Gwendevere, and no one was willing to attempt that. No one even knew that there was another castle that far up the north where that her sister and niece lived there. So it is just an amazing detail that the funniest branch of her family tree has just been, you know, living close, you know, in the Yukon province of Canada. They're just like, oh, we just never go there, so we didn't know they lived there.
Yes, it is. Who's the cousin of Snoopy?
Oh, yeah, and Spike. He lives in Needles,
Spike
California.
Spike lives in Needles, California. This is the Bianca's aunt was killed. Okay.
Yeah, he lives amongst he talks to cactuses, and maybe they're talking to icebergs or something.
So, you know, there were creatures, obviously, that the evil sorceress Gwendevere had her coterie of, you know, the snakes and
trolls,
the panthers,
goblins,
and everything.
Yeah.
So, is it Diane Ellis? What's the lady's?
Denise
left and said, "Larry, describe the creatures that she's got going on in her Alessandra's
castle."
The ants
got? Yeah. Okay.
Okay. There's creatures. Hang on. There's a creature called some sort of a creature. So, Larry, I set the names up, and all you have to do is describe what they are and what their evilness is. So we simply get the creature Darvgoth.
Absolutely incredible. And this is a book where they came up with one original idea, and that was the mini wads. And that was it. Tapped out after that. Yes. So now you just have a servant who was previously a goblin, you know, or a troll. These are the creatures, capital
creature.
C. It's incredible.
All you had to do is pull up one of the sources that you're pulling from left and right and just find another creature name.
Yeah, I mean, go for broke. Orcs, you know, there you go.
Like, sure. Just spell it with a two C's or whatever.
Yeah, dragones or something. Like a humanoid dragon. There you go.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you get the creature Darfgon. I mean, so you know. If Larry didn't come up with anything for creature, Darfgon is a pretty good Larryism, I think.
No, it was like a Mad Lib. She already had those in there.
Oh,
and she
got it. Yes,
and she left, and all he had to do was describe it.
Yeah, so you get sentences like Princess Bianca, the creature Darfgon, and the other creatures with him walked into the throne chamber. So that if you're not reading the book, it's literally how they're describing this last thing. They, the end was in sight, and it was approaching the end of happy hour 2-for-1. So, you know, Larry was just doing his typing as he was, you know, with one hand as he's like buttoning his shirt with the other one.
And I love that she says, so we shall leave the castle soon and move into my sister's castle. That shall become our new headquarters. I mean, a lot of paperwork to happen before this.
Yeah.
Before this goes down.
The foundation still needs repair.
Right. We got to, emptying out this place, you know, moving all the creature boxes. There's like the basement's full of creature feed. We got to move that down.
Yeah, they wear muzzles when you go out because they don't get along with the other, creatures at the creature park.
Yeah, there is a lot of stuff going on here. So,
and that the sorceress says that shall become our new headquarters. Princess Bianca is like, what? Will you consider this our headquarters? I mean, we didn't really do anything here. It's just sort of just where we lived. Is that a...
Right.
All right, sure. You want to call it your headquarters, that's fine.
she was using it in the, pejorative, like, yeah, here at, Nelson HQ.
yeah, right. that's the end of that chapter, and we really... I guess we got to pick it up because we got a lot more characters to meet.
That's true.
Truly insane, but... we get this sentence. I don't think it's happened here. I scrolled ahead a bit. Chapter 17 begins with Lady Alamaj regaining consciousness after she's been, punched in the face so much that she got knocked out.
Mm-hmm.
And she says she laments her dragon. She says, "I shall never allow myself to get this close to another dragon again," which is pretty funny. It's again making a bold pronouncement that you're going to have another chance to even meet one of these rare creatures. She also rages against the kings of Antigua, saying that they should have known the evil sorceress Quindevier had a sister. So she does have a point, like you said, it's a failure of intelligence here.
Mm-hmm. And they did nothing to protect their villages after. They should have expected a retaliatory strike.
Yes.
They did not.
Right.
So she does have a point.
Yeah. And so she immediately, she goes full Jonathan and says, like, everyone in Antigua should suffer the same fate as my friends and family. I'm not going to warn them that the sorceress exists and that she has a dragon as well. And that's when she hears a sound and looks back at the burning village, and a man of 17 years of age walks out from amongst the burning colleges and stood in front of her. And she says something that got me so excited. It said, Lady Alamaj asked, "Who are you? What are you doing here? You're not from around these parts." And I was just like, this cannot be. I thought it was going to be Billy, Rebecca's brother, having been transported here. And I thought we were going to get sort of the parallel thing where, sort of like Edmund in Lion, the Witch, where he was going to come here and he was going to like, join the dark side and end up matching up against Rebecca in part two or something.
Oh, I did not think that.
Oh man.
Because I knew we had an eagle, an eagle boy to deal with, but that, wow. I can't imagine your disappointment.
It was disappointing,
it
resolved itself in like four sentences. So I wasn't hung up for that long, but, he says, "My name is Aethro. I am 17 years old. I come from the village of Knoxville Woods, just east of here." And now that sounded familiar.
yes.
Because I thought it's not the same as Pinesville Knox. This is Knoxville
yes.
Woods.
They're just separate housing developments.
Yes, yeah.
They're close to one another. One has the swimming pool. The other one has tennis courts.
You got to sneak into the tennis courts if you live in Knoxville Woods.
Right.
But yeah, so Pinesville Knox is where Jonathan was from, and that was destroyed by the other dragon, Escalazar, in that sort of flashback we got.
Yes.
He intimates that he doesn't need a horse, which is a weird sentence, and you don't need to worry about that for too long, because suddenly gigantic wings spread out from his back and he smiles proudly and says, "I am Aethro the Eagle Man. I was born this way. Well, what I mean was that when I turned 10 years old, these wings just kind of grew out of my back, as if, you know, this person who rides a dragon around is going to see a guy with wings. He says, I was born this way." And she's like, "Were you really born that way? Okay. It kicked in around puberty. Sorry."
It really seems like it was a moment in a comedy film or something but the music swelled. "My name is Aethro, and I was born this way." And then the music quickly, like record scratch. "All right. I wasn't exactly born this way."
Yeah. What happened was...
Take a trip back with me and we'll see how I got to this place.
A great uncle of mine died. No one even knew he existed because he lived so far north. He left me some money, bought some wings, and there we go. So, I mean...
It's a strange character, though, because he just allows her to absolutely dominate him from the word go.
Mm-hmm.
Like, puts a sword to his throat. There's a strange moment where he won't speak, and then all of a sudden he just starts speaking, but there's no reason that she doesn't
right?
in the first place. And then we get the curious, "Lady Alamage removed her sword from against Aethra's neck and placed it back in its holder around her waist."
The sword holder.
Man, if only there were a word for that. Could have saved us some time. We're kind of stacking up the chapters here. Let's make it a little more
economical. Yeah.
But then... yeah, then she says, like, "Well, no, we're not going to go warn anyone. We're going to do this." "We are."
Yeah.
And he's just like, "Oh, we aren't, my lady?" Like, what are you, idiot eagle child? You have no will of your own?
Yeah, there's no real explanation of why he ended up at this burning village or something. He was just soaring around and saw some smoke and decided to check it out. But he's very much just like the... you know, which kind of guy. She's just, she tells him, he's like, "Should we go warn everybody about the dragon?" She says, "No, we're going to go join the rebel knights in the village of Wild Willows." So that was alluded to earlier. And he just says, like, "We're doing that? We're going to join who? You want to join the rebel knights? We can, you know, they're nothing but pickpockets, thieves, and con artists." But then he essentially just goes along with her immediately.
Yes. He says something that I would like to, I think you read it already, but this would be fun to give to an actor and make them say this convincingly.
Mm-hmm.
And it is, "Don't let my size fool you. There's a lot of strength in my back and legs when my wings are stretched out wide. I'm very sorry about the death of your dragon." Sell that line. Make us not laugh at that.
Yeah, that would
See
be
if
incredible.
You can do that.
That would be, yeah, David Letterman did when he hosted the Oscars, made everyone do a line reading of his line from Cabin Boy, "Would you like to buy a monkey?" And so you had just like, you know, A-list actors doing that in a montage. It would be great. If we get to host the Oscars, we'll make them do that line.
Yes.
I wish you could have, you know, at the end of last episode, told you that this was going to be a sentence in the episode we read this time. "The Eagle Man Aethro landed in the forest in the village of Wild Widows." Wild Willows. So it's where we are now. We just got to go with it. And
yes, the rebels. Yeah. We meet the rebels,
and they sort of, this is like the Mos Eisley Cantina, the scum and villainy of Antigua, and they call him a skinny kid. He says, "I want you all to know, I am 17 years old and soon to be 18. I am a man, and I'm not just any man. I am Aethro the Eagle Man," which is probably not going to be a monologue that gets him to stop laughing at you.
Right. Well, there's this moment between. It's Shamar and Laurent. "Hey, fellas, will you look at that? The young lad is an eagle," the rebel knight Laurent said. "Well, he does have wings like an eagle." Shamar's like, "Yeah, Laurent, that's what I meant. Yeah. I didn't actually think he was an eagle, you dick. I can see."
Laurent
that
is
was
the,
my point.
The Brandon of their group, I think.
Yes.
The dim bulb. And then that is followed up by the rebel knight Pierre saying, "Who are you, lad?" And the Eagle Man Aethro drops some per my last email energy on them, saying, "As I said before, I am Aethro and I am 17 years old."
What is the obsession with the ages?
It's incredible. I think
only when they're teenage, or like, I guess, yeah, teenage, because 19, no one is ever like, who was 20?
Right.
I guess it's between 16
and 19 are the only ages.
I think they just thought that was how to get teenagers to be interested in your book, was just put a bunch of teenagers on them and specifically say it.
Constantly telling you how old they are.
Well, I mean, brother, they're concerned about Lady Audemars, and it goes to a character where, like I said before, there were so many times where it's like, if you're trying to write a bad book, you would not be able to replicate this. But then we get something that just comes out of the blue that's just like, come on, there is 5 pages left in this book, and you're introducing us to the strong rebel knight, Bubba.
Bubba. Which... All right, if that's the direction you're going, the Rebel Knight Bubba. Let me take this big swig of coffee again as you introduce the Rebel Knight Schwartz. Come on.
Yeah, just, you know, Larry's drinking buddies or something, Bubba and Schwartz. Like,
I guess. I mean, that's... But they're just, at this point, look, you've used Peter 4 times. Why are we coming up with Bubba and Schwartz at this point? Did they finally decide we may as well just get overtly funny with these things?
I mean, if the time you're doing that is now, I don't know what to tell you. The moments of humor in the book have been so few and far between that I don't know if this counts or if it's just, you know, Larry getting left alone with a typewriter for a while.
And so we're so close to the end here, and yet, every single time Lady Audemars or Eagle Boy meet a new person, they recount the reason that they're there. I count 6 times.
Wow.
Where they do a full paragraph of, you know, this is what happened to our village.
Wow, that's amazing.
And this is what I'm going to do. Yeah, it's amazing.
Well, I mean, you know... You can't put anything past Rebel Knight Bubba. You might have told him that 30 minutes ago, and you got to probably explain it to him again.
Grab him a cup of blueberry juice and, no, what is that what it is?
Someone's drinking grape berry juice and, well, Schwartz handed Aethro some berry juice and roasted hen. Aethro was honey and started to gulp the grape juice down. Are grapes berries? I don't know.
Oh, grapes. Okay. Well, if we get this one wrong,
yeah,
we'll hear.
Exactly. This is where we finally lose our audience here. What's his name? Aethro says, call me Eagle Man. They keep calling him Eagle Boy. I brought Lady Audemars here to Wild Willows because she asked me to. Because of the destruction of her entire village and the loss of everyone she has ever known and loved, she has accepted the same philosophy as you rebels. So it's a very, from my point of view, the Jedi are evil type of line. That's what she's done here. She's accepted a philosophy. That's she's read up on the rebels of Wild Willows philosophy and decided that that's what she's going to be going with. Did she meditate on that? I hope so.
But I hope so. And where did she see their? Do they post their philosophy? Like, what, yeah. Are there screeds available on the internet? Or
Antigua has its own wiki where they're able to post these sort of things. And then we get another. I forget what we had earlier. We had another great adverb, but the Rebel Schwartz said non-caringly, "Ah, well, that yes. Doesn't really matter."
There's a repeated beat in this. Speaking of like wasting our time, I won't read the whole thing, but this is in one paragraph and then a couple paragraphs later. The two rebel women attended to Lady Alamage's wounds. Lady Alamage remained unconscious for a few minutes. She whispered, where am I? Who are you? It's all right, blah, blah, blah. A couple paragraphs later, where am I? Who are you? The rebel Simone said, you are in the village of Wild Willows. My name is the lady over there. Is her. We're helping you. How did I get to the Wild Willows? Your eagle friend brought you here. The exact same.
Yeah.
Just a couple paragraphs later, she wakes up.
Yeah.
They did it once. Hey, that was good. That was really good where I had her wake up and she wondered where she was. And then they explained who they were. She said how she got there. I'm going to do it again.
That's getting cut like in the paperback, Larry. That is not going to fly.
You're never going to get to paperback with this crap, I'll tell you that.
I'll tell you what, Cat Eyes Publications is going to be a, you know, that I'm the next J.K. Rowling, Larry.
Cat eyes. Yeah, it's my workman's comp check that got cat eyes off the ground in the first place.
That's a nice little detail.
You know, it's probably 50% chance.
Yeah, parody, satire, but probably true. Speaking of backstory, this was a detail. As she's regaining consciousness over and over again and asking where she was, and hopefully they're realizing she has sustained severe head trauma because she's not forming any new memories and probably needs attention beyond what the rebels of Wild Willows are able to provide. Aethro has been telling everyone else stories about his childhood and how difficult it was to have wings all while he was growing up. So that's a how dare they omit this type of thing moment. We need to Aethro getting shoved into lockers and, you know, pants in the locker room type of stories. But so he's not coming from a race or village of Eagle Boys.
He's just like a singularity.
Yeah, Warren Worthington III in X-Men. He just sprouted him one day, and then he's a freak for the rest of the people.
But... Speaking of names, all right, so we had, Bubba Schwartz, Franklin, and then they're introducing new ones. I don't know, why do we keep
it's incredible. New? Because it's the Ellison, that's why.
Simone, and then introducing them to Eagle Boy around the fire, I think. Those two over there are the rebels, Alexandra and Laurent. That's Dwayne over there. So Dwayne is the character who's like, how you doing, man?
Yep.
I'm not a rebel. I heard some music in the opposite camp one day, and I came over, and I figured, shit, my old lady left me, so I'll just hang out with the rebels for a while.
Do some whittling. Yep.
Well, it's nice to meet you, Dwayne.
Yeah, you too, man. Yeah.
Back at you, Captain.
Yeah, it's a very Jim Daly introduction. That's Pierre, Shamar, Franklin, and Schwartz. And, of course, you already know me and Simone. That's Dwayne over there. Yes. I'm Jim Daly. We've played that on one of the podcasts at some point in time, but that's there's another instance of that happening. Oh my God, what else is left here?
All right. Well, we hang out in the camp for a while. I don't have any of that until they get back to the female head centaur.
Oh, yeah.
The
they go back to visit her to send her. They're delivering a note to her?
Yes.
I think they give a note to Aethro.
Oh yeah, would you fly this note to her? Mm-hmm. And this is like a dick move from Alamage, because she knows she's not going to be there. She told her.
Oh right, she's off to the party, as she wrote in her letter.
Yes, so that's what happens. Eagle Boy flies up there. Once again, security lacks in all of these kingdoms. He strides around.
But he doesn't have to worry about flying into the dragon Voraltrar since he was destroyed. That's a sentence from the book, a mind-blowing sentence from the book at this point in time.
It's kind of like saying, you know, that cruise missile, you know, blew up Detroit, but so I don't have to worry about that anymore. Oh, they have more cruise missiles?
Oh. But he walks up, he sees five beautiful, strong unicorns, and one of the unicorns nodded his head. Aethro walked over to the unicorn and placed the note in his mouth, to which I was just hoping for like a,
no, that's not what I wanted you to do. What the hell, man? That is so rude.
Not why I was nodding.
But I love that, so the Eagle Man Aethro becomes the UPS guy.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, hello there. My name is Aethro. I have a note here for the queen. I see that she is not here in the land of unicorns, so I'll just leave it here with you.
I am going to need a signature on that, probably by the one of you who does not have a note in your mouth, though.
So I'm going to hand you the pad. No, don't turn the pad over. Just sign it right there on the bottom. There you go.
Just got to take a photo of the note in your mouth that uploads so she can see where it was left.
And then I'm going to get out of your hair, and you guys have a great day.
Eagle Man. Yeah. It's hard not to think of the bird person from Rick and Morty, who he has a very like flat voice and is very serious as he's doing all these ridiculous things.
Yes.
It does say that the female's head center of the unicorns and 20 of your unicorns had flown south to the celebration. And it was like, oh, yeah, well, that celebration, how is that happening? And that sort of gives us the license to jump back to the celebration where all this is happening. Which is where we thought we were going to be once the battle had ended in the first place. I feel like we did not talk about the Lady Alamaj Shaga as long as it felt like it was in the book there. But it is obviously setting up a sequel and an antagonist for that as it goes forward. But for now, we're back at the party where Vlandorf is forgiving Jonathan as well.
Yes.
And just as the other wizard apprentices had forgiven him. And
yes.
He does get told, I think, by the head center of the unicorns, that there is another prophecy that says the one day in the future, one of Vlandorf's young wizards would not only betray him, but that particular wizard would cause Vlandorf's death. And Vlandorf felt within his spirit that Jonathan was that wizard. So he's not, he doesn't rely on the fact that Jonathan betrayed the whole kingdom and joined the one evil person's side. No, no, he feels it within his spirit. Like that's what really gives him concern. Not that the fact that this has already happened and he's already betrayed someone and he was clearly evil before that, but he does feel it within his spirit.
What's great about that is that in typical Ellis fashion, it happens in the exact reverse order, where we learn of that after we see him looking with a look of fear and concern came on the great wizard Vlandorf's face.
I did it now.
And William saw it and was worried. And then like a couple paragraphs later.
What's wrong, sir? Yeah.
You know what the reason for that was?
Yeah, so, exactly. It's perfect.
It's because he had heard of this thing.
A second prophecy, let alone. Like, you know, she's just doling out these prophecies. You know, she's had a few drinks and then she's remembering more prophecies and stuff.
But Vlandorf, this is puzzling. Vlandorf really believed in the prophecies and believed that they weren't to be tampered with.
Huh.
So he has the ability to tamper with it?
Like,
what is your...
Well, you know, it's...
What is your reason for not, then? If you can... Well, like, who's going to punish you if you reverse the prophecy? If you tamper with it so that it says, oh, no, Jonathan's going to turn into... my manservant, right, and is going to work for me for the rest of my life.
Well,
and
then,
I'm going to live till I'm 170.
Then maybe Brandon would have turned out his lifetime goal would have been to be your manservant, and he would have been so jealous that he would have turned evil and kill you. It's that sort of bullshit where it's like, ah, but I didn't specify who it would be, so therefore you can't do anything about it because by trying to tamper with it, you will just make it happen.
I would like to level the theory here that they were not looking for the word tampered.
Yeah, right. Yeah, it's not like the you know, NBA lottery draft balls or something where it's like, no, we got to make sure that the Knicks get the top pick here. So I'm just going to tamper with this, make theirs lighter so it comes out quicker.
I think they were looking for the word trifled. I don't know.
Oh, it's late in the game.
It is.
But that's how that chapter ends, and then this is the final chapter in the book. So we have dealt with a lot of stuff we weren't expecting to, but here we're finally going to come to the big question that was on all our minds. Does Rebecca go back for Billy as she said she would? And this chapter begins with, after the great celebration, Rebecca walked up before the thrones. So we know it's all going to be about her, and they say that, because of your courage and your fulfilling of the prophecy, we're free and at peace. I now name you Princess Rebecca of the Land of Antigua. So she is given sort of the honorific title of princess, which sort of devalues it for everybody else. Personally, I think, but that's neither here nor there.
They're all heroes, so true. I guess, yeah, giving them a princess label is not going to dilute it any for them.
Yep. And,
they know how it works.
And it turns out that the sarcastic cat now lives here with King Alexandrio. He's quipping sarcastic remarks and licking his paws at the king now. And the owl Orrend is outside in a tree saying, hoo, hoo, and blinking his big, beautiful owl eyes. So they've all just sort of been adopted by one of these kings, I guess.
So all is right with the world. Yeah. but King Alexandrio, about the cat, he shook his head at the cat and looked away. He mumbled underneath his breath, stupid cat. King Alexandrio totally ignored Sorceress's cat. What?
Did he? Yeah.
He just had a strong interaction with it. Oh, very strange.
Ignore sarcastic. Words just don't have meaning anymore. It's the 1984 people telling you that the words no longer mean what they mean.
He tampered with that cat, that's for sure.
He tampered in the meaning of words domain. it says that Rebecca then transitioned to her at the shore of the waters of Antigua. She knew that she had to go home, but she knew she would miss everyone in the land of Antigua. She would especially miss William. So they sort of have their little tearful goodbye. And then she gets her Wizard of Oz send-off, where every one of the princesses comes up to her and sort of explains. It says how Rebecca helped them grow as a person, but it's really just some nonsense that like they realize themselves, I guess.
Yeah, you've taught me that having too much pride in yourself and walking around as though you're better than everyone else is not good for anyone. I guess I recall something about that.
Yeah, they realized that at some point in time, but you know, Rebecca, I think, was just walking around as William talked to her when that realization happened.
Yeah, yes, exactly.
But also, do you really have to be taught that not thinking that you're better than everybody is a good thing? Like, that's... I had to be taught that I shouldn't go around and kick old men in the nuts. That's a real important lesson you taught me, Rebecca. But it does. We get some of these our favorite characters back, you know, because the kings and queens are all there, their daughters, all the wizards, the wizard apprentices, even Gordle, Glendra, and Bubo Gorilla were there.
Yeah,
even they were there.
Everyone knows them, so of course they're going to be there.
Right, exactly. I just I hope that she was able to teach them important lessons as well. I fear that Bubo will be growing up in a world without Rebecca, and I fear for his education.
Right. So they Chrondria, and what are their names? The other
Chrondria, Chironda.
Chironda and Chrondria. Anyway,
Philandria and Chirona.
They take her through the waters, and as you know, the ocean is divided. The ocean of the waters of Antigua are divided in half. One's a decent king. The other one is, they squabble,
king
right?
King Harnacqua,
fight. Yeah. They come past his side of the ocean, and he doesn't care anymore. Because he'd already heard about the death of the sorceress and Voltror. So that prophecy is done. Which, you know, again, proves he's an idiot as well as everyone else in the kingdom, because the last time they destroyed a dragon, less than a decade ago, maybe around a decade ago, the very same thing happened. So he has relaxed. He's let the missile system go down.
Yep, let your guard down.
DEFCON is back up. He's fine. And he lets enemies swim through his territory, because who cares?
Right, yeah. I like the idea of him hearing about it. That's just a funny to imagine word spreading to the underwater king that the... you know, he's like, you know, sitting there playing a handheld video game, and Charlie the octopus comes in. Hey, did you hear that, you know, the evil sorceress Gwendevere's dead? What? Who's it? Huh? Oh, yeah? How about that? Goes back to the video game. I heard about it. But as they left, we got this sort of delightful moment. The gorilla Glendra started to cry. Gordle handed her a handkerchief and said, "There, there. Everything is going to be all right, dear." Glendra Gorilla said, "Gordle, honey, I missed the child from the other side of the waters of Antigua already." Gordle put his hand on Glendra Gorilla's shoulder. Tears were rolling down his cheeks as well. So she made a hell of an impression in that.
How long were they together?
I mean, he went to their home. He invited her into their home. They fought off the nasty fox together. So, yeah, I just hope
that's
that
true.
They, I hope that, I think they'll, all in all, it will help them raise their child better. Her influence will be felt.
It is true they walked her to the kingdom, right? They walked right up to the king.
Yeah.
So, you know, that could have been quite a journey
compressed
in the book.
Yeah.
Which is too bad. More gorilla, of course, would have been better. Yeah. But
maybe she gave William the scarecrow's "I'm going to miss you the most of all," and Gordle's upset about that because he was a little into her. But this is how you transition back. Once you cross this area of the ocean, you will no longer be in the waters of Antigua. You will be in your own land back in Britain. The mermaids waved goodbye to Rebecca and pointed the way for her to go. Rebecca swam out of the waters of Antigua and found herself right back in Britain.
Found herself. When Tenzing Norgay climbed the mountain, he found himself at the top of Everest, I guess is how is how that works.
Yeah. Is she dripping wet? Like, is she doing the backstroke out of the water? Like, because it says it then cuts to Ms. Branshaw, Dr. Richardson, the maintenance crew, and a couple of policemen stood over Rebecca's bed. So it's just she's changed, you know, she's no longer near a river. I presume she's not wet or anything like that, but they're just standing over like Dorothy.
That was a laugh out loud moment for me because, all right, so we're back in Britain, but not characters that we know. We get Dr. Branshaw, Richardson? Dr. Richardson, and the maintenance crew, and a couple of policemen.
Yeah, the Filches of this orphanage.
Oh, come on.
Including a Harvey, a maintenance man named Harvey, who shows out the policeman.
Right. Okay, so obviously this is the Wizard of Oz.
Mm-hmm.
And she had a bump on the head.
Yep.
There's other people around in the orphanage, Rachel, Amanda, and Maitland.
Maitland, yeah.
I don't remember if they were mentioned. There's Barrington, Walter, and Lawrence are around as well.
That's the maintenance crew.
That's the maintenance crew. And that, I assumed, was the... That's obviously the, you know, Huck and whatever, the three farmhands in the Wizard of Oz. The only one is Barrington, Sir Barrington.
He was in Antigua.
He was in Antigua, but there was no Walter or Lawrence.
Wow.
So what is that supposed to mean?
And Sir Barrington, he was the guy who was like as strong as five other knights, I think. But I don't know if they ever interacted with Rebecca.
I don't think so. I'm looking up Sir Barrington. Strong knight Sir Barrington, who some thought had the strength of five men. So he's also in the maintenance crew at the end.
Wow. So if it had been competent, it would have been like our maintenance crew, Barrington, Gordle, and Nastifox or whatever, like would have found
the child.
Yeah.
No, but it's Walter and Lawrence, and I'm searching it right now. Lawrence, there's one mention of him in that.
That is here right now.
As a member of the
maintenance crew. Yeah, they found
the maintenance
crew. Wow. But then speaking of other people who the payoff doesn't happen, Rebecca's brother was sitting at her bedside. So he did reappear, but throughout the rest of this time, he's just referred to as her brother, if he's referred to at all again. He's never referred to as Billy.
So
I'm going to consider this a soft Blariana ink. Billy was never mentioned again. Her brother did come back into the picture. So, you know, it's like a 4 out of 10 on the scale.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, that's being very technical about it. So in the land of Antigua, though, then, because there was a Barrington, can we assume, I'm just going to find the Billy. Wasn't Billy part of the fight?
Oh.
Yes, yeah, Sir Billy.
Where Sean Thomason was there?
Where the local boys.
Okay.
Yeah, there was Stefan and Joseph and Anton pretending with fake wooden swords. And Trina, comes up and just starts messing with
that. And that's when she learned her lesson not to, mess with these boys.
Right. So is that what, are those the only two crossovers? Billy and Barrington?
If anyone picks up on... people that existed in the real world that existed in Antigua, please let us know, because that's some pretty sick stuff to delve this far into these authors' mind when they went about as half-assed this obvious thing as you could possibly do. And all it took was three people. Use the same three names. You came up with 250 names here. Just all you have to do is pick two more of them and put them at her bedside.
Well, that's what I can only imagine is at the end they went, oh, we should have had these guys be people who were in Antigua. And then they did a find and replace, but they stopped after they did Barrington. wouldn't we have to connect them then? I don't know. We're done. Yeah. I can't write anymore.
Yeah, yeah. The 38 special cover band started. We got to get down there. It's the original bassist. <He's> But so they're all sort of sitting there talking, and it says, Rebecca had gained consciousness, so she was out, and heard the doctor say, she's going to be just fine. It's just a minor concussion. She's a very lucky young lady. Everything that Rebecca heard sounded like a blur, so she has some synesthesia there. She can see her sound. Yes. She couldn't hear clearly. She was still weak and very confused. So which is it? Is she going to be fine, or it sounds like serious head trauma? Her head hurt like crazy. She couldn't tell if she was dreaming or awake. It's a serious head injury. And then she wakes up and she starts talking what had happened. I fell into the river. I became unconscious, a mermaid. I met gorillas named Gordle and Glendra. I went to battle against the evil sorceress Gwendevere and helped save the land of Antigua. Now I guess I'm back home with all of you. Everyone just looked at each other. They didn't know what to say. Then suddenly everyone in the room started laughing. It's like, yeah, I probably should have left off the gorillas out of that whole recap that I can understand.
You guys got hung up on that when really what I was trying to say was I was part of a grand adventure.
Yeah, and, you know, they put everyone died, but then a head female center of the unicorns brought everyone back to life. Okay, I'm going to upgrade this to a major concussion here. This is...
Do not let her fall asleep. I am calling an ambulance now. There's obviously brain bleed. We're going to get you to a hospital. We're going to tap your skull, yeah. I'm afraid.
Make her bite down on this stick so she doesn't bite off her tongue when she lapses back into unconsciousness. Well, do you want to read how this ends? Give everybody how the what happens here?
I will, because it was spoiled for you,
spoiled
right?
Spoiled for me, but I only sort of read the last line of the book. So I didn't have the whole thing ruined. So I was pleasantly surprised to come to this last paragraph.
Okay, so they all laugh, and they say, there is no such place as the land of Antigua. Just then, Rebecca looked up into the corner of the room and saw the pixie Tamari. The pixie took a small pebble, tossed it, and hit Dr. Richardson right upside his head. Dr. Richardson yelled out, ouch, where in the world did that come from? The pixie Tamari covered her mouth with her hands so no one could find her or hear her giggling. Rebecca started laughing and said, I guess you're right. There really is no such place as the land of Antigua.
The end.
About the authors.
If the pixie Tamari, who I believe we only met in the last section of the book, she was flying around and she threw a stone and hit one of the fairies or something. It was a very minor character. It wasn't like Gordle appeared or something. If she had forced Dr. Richardson into a tree, well, I mean, would you have just, I mean, bought a lottery ticket? It would have been the greatest moment of your life, probably.
I would have used whatever money I have saved till this point to buy Cat Eyes Entertainment and resurrect it.
Force them to write, yeah, go to their house like Kevin Costner does to James Earl Jones in Field of Dreams, pretend you have a gun and make them write another book.
Yes.
Yeah, pull the misery on them. That was... Oh, man. It's a special book we've just finished, I think.
Oh, wow. What a ride.
It really was. It was, when we started it, we always sort of delayed it because it was pretty long. It was like 125,000 words, I think, something like that.
It's, yeah.
Just 102, but it felt longer. But so unpredictable, so original, and so sort of like childlike and goofy that it was hard, even though it never really had a real through thread, that it was hard not to be affectionate for it.
I wonder, did we miss any of the, it's obviously just a grab bag of other things and then filtered through the occasionally day drinking mind of uh-huh. parody satire mm-hmm. of a couple in Miami, Florida. I think we have all the, it's, you know, obviously Lord of the Rings,
Wizard of Oz,
Chronicles of Narnia, yep. Wizard of Oz, Harry Potter. Anything else that we missed?
I mean, that's the Mount Rushmore, I think, of what they were pilfering from.
Okay. So yeah, as a mishmash of it, it is amazing to see what a person with, well, pretty much zero talent does when you ask them to describe the, you know, do this. Make this for me.
Right.
You know, it's like when if I'm asked to draw something and, like, look at that drawing, which, you know, you'll see a drawing that looks simple. Just draw that. Mm-hmm. And then what comes out is, like, a hideous collection of lines that there's no, like, resemblance to it.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's to their credit, it's like, you know, if they asked you to program something on a computer, that type of thing, you'd be like, well, I don't know how to do that. So this is right. not going to work. And that's what happened here. They do have another book. Someone tracked it down. So maybe one day we can revisit that. I assume it's just as delightful, and maybe they will put out part two someday. That would be a hell of an announcement.
Are you talking about, oh, you talked to part two of this, but there's a book one of the Adventures of Teen Archaeologists.
Yes, The Land of the Mopac. And it seemed out of print, but someone did find a way to track it down. So I believe there's an ebook of that. If we do want it, we'll be able to find that.
Halfway through the description, the teenagers steal a map and are able to find the lost civilization, which is ruled by a king
queen and a princess.
Oh, my God.
The land of Mopac has all kinds of hidden dangers, including dinosaurs, giant Komodo dragons.
Wow.
One of your favorite things.
I went through there. When I went through the book, I found the Komodo dragon passage, and I was like, oh, that was so delightful so early on. And I wish that had come back at some point in time.
The greatest danger to everyone in the underground city is a giant gorilla.
How giant?
The size of 3 gorillas put together.
My God. It's incredible. And listen to this. They take their 3 teenagers, Billy, who is 17, Thomason, Arturo Thomason or whatever, who is 16, and Rebecca, who was 15, on a family vacation to Africa.
What?
It's the way that, that things keep coming up. The Dark Man keeps coming up through Stephen King, the number 19, all that stuff. They've just got their own little universe here.
Man. Well, we look forward to
that. Let's put it in our canon. I don't think we need to rewrite rankings, but let's just go through book by book and you say whether you like this book better. Because I think maybe a top 3 for me. Player One.
Oh, I like this way better.
Armada.
This way better.
Eye of Argon.
Eye of Argon better.
Okay. Cause the length did it did work to its detriment, I feel like.
Yeah.
War.
This better.
Yeah, I think so too. Forensic Certified Public Accountant. Dutch like David Thrash.
The length of that. That one annoyed me after a while, so I'll say this one a little
bit. I think
better.
I like this one better. They had a lot of similar vibes, but that one just had so much more copy and pasted stuff. Bob Honey, Who Just Do Stuff.
This by Galaxies.
Sure. The Mister.
This, not by a ton, but by a significant amount.
Okay. It's very funny. This is from the Wikipedia page, and some of these books still don't have their own pages. We need a Dwight David Thrash Wikipedia page.
Yeah,
come on here.
For sure.
Trucking Through Time, Charles E. Harris.
Oh, that was a little better.
Okay. I think so too. I guess so. It just had more coherence and when the unexpected moments happened, they were so unexpected.
Yeah, and he should be rewarded for actually being a little bit better of a writer.
Yes, yes. True, true. Lair of the White Worm. I liked this better.
I liked this better. Although that had high comic moments, but it was hard. It was a slog to read.
Sure. Yeah. If this had some of the horrific racism of that book, that would have been quite a surprise. Shadow Moon, obviously, this is better. Moon People.
That is almost a lateral move for me. It's really tough.
Yeah. That might
I'd
be,
have to revisit
that
it.
That might be worth reading part 2 of that, because he did make part 2. We'll have to see what happens
there.
Okay,
yeah.
Digital Fortress.
This.
Yes, this better. That one's so long. It's funny, but it was so long. My Immortal.
This.
I mean, that's a teenage girl throwing the four elements into a Harry Potter and all that into a blender and hitting blend. Midnight Sun. This definitely.
What was Midnight Sun?
That was the Twilight from the Vampire's point of view.
Oh, God. Ugh, I've blocked that from my memory. This, for sure.
Ready Player 2. This, obviously. This, Quilters Push Back.
Ooh, another lateral for me. Yeah. I enjoyed that. That was shorter, too. I'm going to say that this is slightly below that.
Okay.
Just very, very slightly.
All right. Model Land, I'd say this.
This is way better.
Irene Iddesleigh, I say this. It's just more, yeah, more absurd. So, yeah, it's definitely looks like it's probably in the top 3, top 4 for us. I think most people thought that as well.
Oh, good. So we're pretty much on track here with listeners.
Oh yeah, I think people were pretty delighted by this. I think the tracking the characters and envisioning the world and just a brand new voice that's unlike anything people have ever read before was pretty popular.
That's for sure.
Well, I guess we should sum up our dub sentences.
A sentence begins with a capital letter. A capital letter is a letter that's big. A capital letter is not a small letter. A capital letter is big.
So these are
big,
the dumb
big.
Sentences of the week. The final ones for Antigua, but a lot of these come from our Patreon supporters who you should join. Patreon.com/372pages. We had a bonus mailbag this week. Update on evil bird kites. Your breakdown of the Billy situation. And they're the first to find out what we're doing next. So join them. And make all that happen. We really appreciate all the people who support the podcast. It's a lot of fun over there. These are the dumb sentences of the week. Here is one from Jim. The knights Sir Livingston, Sir Williamsburg, and Sir Bronson rolled a gigantic man-made slingshot onto the battlefield. And he appreciated that that clarifies that they're not talking about the organic, natural evolving kind of giant slingshot.
Sure.
Jeffrey submitted, I left a young teenager, almost my age, alive to let the entire land of Antigua know of your wrath. He said, I don't think I've ever read a sentence that managed to be both oddly specific and completely vague at the same time. A young teenager, almost my age. Olivia submitted, the female head centaur of the unicorns blew her breath gently against the dust. Mark Berger, always good to hear from Mark Berger. He mumbled under his breath, stupid cat. King Arlexandrio totally ignored the sorceress's cat. And he claims it's one sentence by virtue of how written dialogue works. I guess if you just claim that the spoken part is part of the same sentence, he says it sums up all that's wrong with Antigua. Underneath his breath is not something a human would ever say. by the king saying something, he's not ignoring this cat, as we've addressed. It does not warrant an exclamation, and every sentence in the book is dumb, dumb, dumb. Mm-hmm. Justin submitted, Lady Alamaj said, hello, Bubba. Bubba shows up a lot here. Elizabeth submitted, the rebel Bubba said, it's good to see you. This is more than one sentence, but we'll allow it because it's the end of the book. The rebel Bubba said, it's good to see you up and about, little lady. Welcome to Wild Willows. I'm Bubba. Little Lady Alamaj said, hello, Bubba. So Bubba's doing the, well, how's the little lady doing? Yeah. George submitted another one. You had the, what was it? What did she put the sword in? The sword pack? Sword case.
She returned the sword to the thing on the belt loop around her dress that she, you know, tortured.
George submitted the royal. This is when they're getting the party going. The royal cooks from all three provinces got together in King Arthur's cooking chamber and cooked up a feast big enough for everyone in the land of Antigua to eat. And he said, "Cooking chamber. If only there were a word for that." John says, the wizard Vlandorf then pointed his magic wand towards Sasha's hand and shook it. And this was like the Gozarf sentence. So he says, did he shake his wand or shake his hand? And since we had two of them, we now know that they're shaking his wand at these to cast the spells.
Right.
Jay submitted, Princess Bianca and Lady Alamaj was sword fighting with each other while riding on their dragons up in the sky. Mike submitted, each and every inhabitant of this land shall pay for what they have done to my sister Gwendevere and the great dragon Voraltrar. And he said, it doesn't speak much to their relationship that she's swearing to avenge her sister and her sister's pet. It would have been a little less compelling if Hamlet had said, a villain kills my father and his hamster, and for that, I, his sole son, do this same villain send to heaven. yeah, more comparisons of Antigua to Shakespeare, please. Jennifer and Daniel both submitted, I think as we predicted, it was the head centaur of the unicorns who was a centaur. Do you have anything that we haven't burnt yet?
No, all of those were already covered. And of course, she had no idea who Princess Bianca was or why she had just burned down her village, but she wanted her to pay for what she had just done. That may take the cake. Yeah.
Well, mine was this. It's it's just buried in the forest of dumbness on that great plains of Antigua was this one. The eagle man Aethro pointed his finger at the rebel knight Bubba. I have to kiss my fingers at it. It's beautiful.
You're not going to get that sentence in any other book. True. Yeah.
I don't know. Cormac McCarthy announced those two new books coming out in October. So, prove us wrong, Cormac.
All right, there it is.
Yeah. Woo! What a journey.
What a journey.
Yeah. Wow. Almost ended the podcast with a jinx. But yeah, thanks to everyone who read along with us, everyone who submitted stuff, everyone on Patreon. This was a lot of fun.
Stay tuned for Teen Archaeologists in the Land of Mopac. May not happen.
May not happen. But yeah, we'll be back with you soon. Thanks again, everybody.
So long.
Hello, Nasty Fox here. Sad to say that the situation down here in the dungeon has not gotten any less nasty. The bucket you gave me was woefully insufficient, leaked everywhere. But that's fine. I like it nasty. But come on! 3 months has got to be up by now. Let me out. I'll name names. You know, like Gordle. He was downloading movies off of LimeWire. Come on. Let me out. My fur is so matted. And that's saying something, because I like matted fur because I'm so nasty. Come on, you sons of bitches. What the hell are you even doing up there? I've been out of the sun so long I got rickets. And that's not even a nasty ailment, so it's really annoying. I didn't even get a phone call to my lawyer. Charlie E. the Octopus. Yeah, that's right. My lawyer's an octopus. And he works pro bono because I let him spray his ink all over me. I don't mind because I'm so nasty. You know what? I've never told anyone that. I'm just realizing I may never see anyone else again. My last act as a free, nasty fox was to fight a gorilla. I've wasted my life. No, well, may as well do the only thing that keeps me sane down here. Lick my anus for several hours. Now that's nasty.